This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports show produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I'm the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Marcus Vandenberg. And Brother Marcus, have we got a show for the people this week?
A big, big show.
Yeah, there's a lot going on this week.
If you don't like your family, we have the show for you, because you can easily waste 2 hours listening to us.
Yeah, if you just sit on the couch and you the football game's on yet and your family's watching the Macy's parade and you just want a break before the trichinosis sets in, just put this show on, because we've got plenty of stuff coming up. This week we have an interview with Rob Schamberger, the wrestling artist. We've got the much-anticipated interview with Steve Glenwick, the founder of TagMeADate.com. And we've got our usual segments, segment two, second down, our football fix. We've got segment four. But once again, real life intrudes on the world of sports, and we would be derelict in our duties if we did not address the elephant in the room, my brother.
Yes. So the Ferguson, the Michael Brown decision came down on Monday night, and it came back that the grand jury decided that there was not evidence to charge Officer Darren Wilson in the murder of Mike Brown, and of course that set Ferguson off Monday night, and as expected, there is some protest that turned somewhat, not violent, because no one, I believe, was seriously injured from what happened last night, but a little unruly, I guess you could say. Some rioting was going on, some cop cars were torched, some businesses were looted. So we talked off air about how to, make sure we should address this, and I'm curious about your thoughts on the whole decision about not charging Darren Wilson with anything.
Not surprised. Like, that would be my overall statement. Not surprised. I went on Facebook late last night, early this morning. Full disclosure, we're recording on Tuesday, the day after the verdict was released. But basically, I was like, I'm going to make one post and one post only in regards to this thing, because the cacophony of noise and opinions and, quite frankly, disrespect that swirls around this topic on social media is something that, I'm not about that life. But, I went on and basically my feelings were that the verdict didn't surprise me. It's sad to say, and my buddy Tony that listens to the show out in San Diego, what's up, Tony? He was like, there is a numbness that comes with things of this nature that black and brown and other minorities feel when we get into topics of the legal system, the justice system, when we get into topics of race and things of that nature, where, yeah, you're sad, yeah, you're angry, you're frustrated, but at the end of the day, are you surprised? Like, I was not surprised at all, especially when I saw them stretching out the announcement of the verdict, which I guess was reached at 1 yesterday, and they didn't release it until 9 Eastern that night. But, I wasn't surprised, Marcus. Were you surprised by the outcome?
No, I wasn't surprised. And I'm at the point now where I'm not even mad, because I'm just sort of like, I'm over it almost, you know? I wasn't upset. And not because I don't care. It's just like, what am I going to be upset about, you know? It's just at the point now where there's a little to no chance in a situation like that where you're going to be, or you feel like justice is on your side. I just, you know, was numb to it. But I do want to say, I the part that has sort of thrown me for a loop a bit is I think the conversation needs to be had that while what Darren Wilson did was wrong, at the same time, Mike Brown was also in the wrong in a couple ways. One, for the initial incident, the robbery at the liquor store. And second, while we don't know the details of what happened between him and Darren Wilson, one is to assume that he wasn't listening to the cop from the very beginning. I think that's something that as a black male, these are the conversations we need to have with our young black males, because you can't, the law is treated differently for us as black men. And for you not to have that conversation and explain to your young black child that, hey, look, when the cops do stop you, if they do stop you, you need to listen to them. Because if you don't, situations like this won't happen. And, you know, if what I watched Darren Wilson's interview that he did on ABC this evening, and he told his side of the story.
Which if he was paid for, you know, I know there's reports out there. If he was paid for this, I feel some type of way about that.
Yeah, I don't know what ABC's policy is with that in terms of paying for interviews and stuff. But, you know, the story he told, even if it was 50% true, there was still a point where Mike Brown wasn't listening to the cop. And, you know, whether he hit him first or what, regardless, if the cop says, hey, you know, pull over, I want to talk to you, you got to listen. At that point, you got to listen, because you don't want to give them the opportunity to shoot you. And that's what happened in the end. He was shot for two reasons. One, for getting himself in a situation where he was robbing the liquor store, allegedly. And two, finding himself in a situation where he wasn't listening to the cop. And you know, what happened. So I think that's a conversation that needs to be had after this, because, you know, I looked at the reaction and sort of the rallying cry when you compare this case to Trayvon Martin, and I feel like this has turned into a bigger story. And I don't know if that's because there's a cop involved or what, but I feel like what Trayvon Martin did in his situation, he was far more in the innocent with George Zimmerman compared to Mike Brown and the officer.
I agree, and I think that. And this is one of those situations where if this were, you know, the Jalen Rose podcast or, you know, an ESPN or Fox Sports branded show, you would be like, don't get fired, Nate.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, since we are an independent operation and since I think, you know, 95% of our listeners are going to get where I'm coming from, and to the 5% that don't, you know, hey, you know, I'm not really worried about y'all right now. I hope that you can hear what I'm saying, you know, through your anger. But it's sad, but it's a fact of life. It's an unfortunate fact of life that a black suspect needs to behave in a different way than a white suspect.
Yep.
If you are a young black man, if you're, you know, anywhere from the ages of 15 to 25 and you're a black man, you are a threat. Bottom line, point blank, period. Doesn't matter if you're as short as me. Doesn't matter if you're as tall as Calvin Johnson. If you're big, skinny, if, you know, there is a narrative, there is a feeling out there that you are a threat regardless of who you are individually as a person. And part of, you know, and I don't even like this term, but I guess it applies in this situation. Part of white privilege is that in a situation like this, you can be looked at as an individual. You know, whether you're little Billy or Bobby or Johnny or whatever, you're not looked at as this big criminal threat. You know, you're not looked at as somebody that's going to do me harm. You're looked at as a knucklehead. You're looked at as boys being boys. You're looked at as an idiot in some cases, but there is not the sense of imminent danger that comes with this packaging of being a black man. And so, you know, you cannot get away with lipping off to the police. You can't get away with making any threatening moves towards the police. And, you know, if even, you know, like you said, 50% of this that we're hearing from Darren Wilson or what we've heard from the grand jury testimony is true. Yeah. You know, Mike Brown is not a hero. Mike Brown is not, you know, Martin Luther King. Let's not get it twisted.
Yeah. And that's the feeling that I hope you don't go in that direction, because that's the road it seems like we're headed. And we've just totally ignored like the first part of the situation where he was involved, and it's on video. I mean, no one really can dispute that, because there's video footage of him robbing the cigarettes or taking the cigarettes from the liquor store, and then from there it just went downhill.
Right, and in one of the conversations that I've been having, not even conversations that I've been having, because I'm trying to stay out of it because I am. It personally sickens me to the stomach, but one of the things I see on the news channels, one of the things I see on social media is this idea that what the rioters and what the looters are doing, which, you know, we're not condoning that. What's the old Chris Rock line about OJ? Like, I wouldn't have done it,
but I understand. Yeah.
Right. And so it's what they did in Ferguson is not just about Mike Brown. That is the catalyst. That is the spark that lit the fire, literally and figuratively. But this is bigger than that. This is Mike Brown. This is Trayvon Martin. This is Amadou Diallo. This is Rodney King. This is Jim Crow laws. This is a systemic problem in America that we only seem to talk about when things like this happen, and then you get, you know, the commentators, or whether they're on Fox News or whether they're on social media, they're like, you know, but what about the evidence? What about this case? Why are you guys so mad? And it's like, it's about this case, but it's not about this case. It's about everything. It's about being marginalized. It's about being invisible. It's about your voice not being heard. And the other thing that I wrote about on Facebook is like, you get this weird dichotomy where will America profit and find pleasure in the fruits of black folks' labor? Hell yeah. We'll listen to rap. We'll listen to R&B. We'll listen to rock. We'll watch the NBA. We'll watch any type of thing like that. But at the end of the day, if you see a young black man in your neighborhood, you've already got your antennas up because you are suspicious of him. So it's like you got this weird, almost abusive relationship where it's like, we love what you give to us, but we don't necessarily like you.
Yeah. It's, I tried to stay off Twitter for most of the night last night, just because nothing good was going to come from it. I did find all the Don Lemon talk pretty entertaining. and he was a riot, because that's what Don Lemon does these days. He's just,
no pun intended.
Yeah. Nope. Oh yeah. No pun intended. But did you catch the first part when they first tossed him in Ferguson last night, what he said?
No.
Basically, he was setting the scene in Ferguson, and he goes, and there's the smell of marijuana is in the air, obviously. It's like, what's that supposed to mean? Obviously, these blats are out here smoking weed because they're stressed out. Like, come on, dude.
Like, the smell of marijuana is in the air. I know, because I just caught the dime bag, everybody.
Yeah.
Man, I'm telling you, there is some unintentional comedy with this stuff, where, you know, you had the one chick from CNN that was, people was throwing stuff at her.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and she's like, man, you know, I got hit in the head with a bottle or a piece of fruit. I don't even know what it is, but that doesn't compare to the people, the pain they feel. And I was like, kudos to you, Stephanie, for being professional. Did you see Fox News, though?
No, I watched zero Fox News last night.
Son, I watch everything because, you know, I like to have a kind of, like, you got to know what all sides are saying, in my opinion, because, like, Fox News can't get infuriating. Like, mm-hmm. Megyn Kelly, I'm sure Megyn Kelly is a smart individual and a probably a nice person, but some of the stuff she was saying was just driving me crazy because, you know, there you've got people that are on the ground giving her a reason why these predominantly black people are angry and why they would choose wrongly to, you know, burn up and destroy their own town over this verdict. And she's like, well, didn't they see the transcript? And it's not about that, Megan. But the funny thing was on Fox, man, I think it was might have been Steve Ducey or somebody like that. I think it might have been the same dude. Remember last time when they had that brother that hijacked the interview?
And Ferguson?
Yeah. I think it might have been the same guy. And I'm like, damn, this dude needs some hazard pay because he was out there with his cameraman. And they were like, this is his fault. Like, there were some looters, and I guess they had put down some liquor because they went back in to get more. And he went over there, and he's like, well, it appears that it looks like a bottle of rosé, Shep. It looks like a bottle of rosé out here. And dude came back and was like, hey, man, you better put that down. He's like, well, Shep, he's telling me to put down the liquor that we can see that he stole from the store. Next thing you know, they chased my man off the scene, and they punched the cameraman. And you see, you go back to the studio, and I don't know if it was Shep Smith or Sean Hannity. He's like, well, apparently Bobby's going through some things right now. We'll see if he's okay in a little bit. Ooh. And it's just like, man, here's the other thing, man. Like, I don't know how you felt, Marcus, but this whole thing seemed like a little bit of a setup from the get-up to me. Like,
in terms of
when they were going to announce the verdict. It's like, we're going to wait till it's nighttime. We got all these cameras in place. We know what's going to happen. And then we're going to report on it as if we're shocked. And what are these people doing? And this is crazy. Like, CNN, I'm not going to take fault with CNN's coverage because I think they're probably the most fair and balanced out of all the major cable news networks. But it's like, you got CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and all these other people out there. And it's like, they knew what they were going to get when they went out there, when they knew this was going to happen.
Yeah. In terms of the timing, you know, I can see both sides, because if you do that verdict reading during the work hours, then you have more people in the streets and you have an even uglier situation. Why they wait until 8 o'clock, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have an ugly situation, but I don't think that if you do this at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're going to get the same level as...
Oh, I think so.
Really? You think so?
I think so.
Because to me, I think that a lot of the people that were out there doing that, like, I don't know how many of them, and it's the same discussion we had last time, you know, how many of these people were actually down for the cause, and how many were, you know, trying to take advantage of a situation.
But I think they were in the town, because we all knew, you know, leading into the morning that it was going to happen that Monday. So I think the people who were already going to be there were there. So, I mean, it would have been in daytime. You would have been able to have seen it more. But I still think it would have been just as bad. And maybe by having it at nighttime, maybe shorten it in terms of, like, say if you announced it at 2 o'clock, you know, it could be 12 hours later. That stuff could still be going on, per se. So I don't know. I don't know the reason why. And of course, they never gave a clear answer as to why they waited so long. But in terms of making sure that people and businesses weren't open, because as we saw, a lot of that stuff got destroyed in terms of the businesses and stuff. So I don't know. That part didn't really bother me too much. The part I found funny was the cops were pretty much stationed outside of the police office, and then everything else was fair game. They're like, all right, you guys can burn that up. We're not going to stop you. But if you guys get close enough to us, we're going to stop you. But go ahead, burn the Little Caesars. We're not going to put out the fire. We're not going to send out the authorities, because really, you're hurting yourself. So just go for it.
Yeah, and this is like something one of the parts of the thing I wrote on Facebook, you know, and it was like honestly, the only thing that made me sad besides the loss of this kid's life. And that's the other thing, man. Just the language that the media uses when they describe Mike Brown. I think Van Jones had a really good point when he was like, you know, Mike Brown is not a hero. He's not a martyr, but he's also not a demon. And I think that some of the language that the media use. You know, they're like, oh, he's not a kid. He's 18 years old. And like, if that was your son, would you be calling him a grown adult?
Did you hear what Darren Wilson had to say about it?
No.
They asked him, you know, what the encounter was like with Mike Brown. He goes, quote, it was like a five-year-old holding on to Hulk Hogan.
Wow. Wow. And Hulk Hogan's like, keep me out of this, brother. And I'm like, yeah, like I saw the video, you know, from the convenience store, the liquor store, wherever it was. And yeah, that's a big dude. But by the same token, you know, he's 18 years old. What is he, 17 at the time?
Mike Brown?
Yeah.
I believe he had like just turned 18, I think.
Just turned 18, yeah.
He was about to start college, like the next week or something.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, yeah, this desire, I guess, to kind of turn him into something that he may or may not be. I'm not saying that he was going to be a Rhodes Scholar. I'm not saying that he was going to be, you know, Citizen of the Year. But to say, like they're playing him like he's Nino Brown out here.
Well, it's the same thing they did with Trayvon Martin. They dug up his past. And, you know, when I think they discovered he had marijuana in his system when he was killed and how he got kicked out of school and all this other stuff. So, I mean, that's what the media does.
Well, that's what the media does to certain people.
Certain people, yes.
Because to me, it's like, you know, and I'm not excusing
or actually, no, to be fair, I should say, it's not so much the media, it's how the general public responds to that news. Because I feel like the media will dig up stuff, and it'll be cool for some people, but for others, right, it'll be, oh, this is, you know, then it comes down on that person
for
being.
He's a thug.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's like, you know, I don't care whether you're 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. To me, as a 37-year-old man, whether you're black, white, red, yellow, purple, whatever, at that age, you're a punk to me because you have not, you know, and that's not the case in every situation, but generally, kids are stupid. Like, let's be real with it, Marcus. Whether you're a white kid, a black kid, a Chinese kid, chances are you're an idiot at that age and you do dumb things and you do things that we as adults and as grown citizens and grown people wouldn't do, but that doesn't mean you have to die.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, what was the boy, the guy that went in and shot up all those people? He killed actual people in the movie theater, and he got away with his life. Yeah, granted, he's going to spend the rest of his life in jail.
You mean Colorado? He didn't kill himself? Oh, no, he didn't.
He didn't.
Yeah.
Because remember, he showed up in court with the crazy purple hair. And he just crazy. He's not a, you know what I mean? He wasn't a thug. He wasn't a terrorist. He's just crazy. And so it's like, things like that is like, It doesn't surprise me, but it does make me give some people the side eye. The other thing, when you're talking about, you know, where the police were stationed last night, you know, I'm not an advocate of violence, but if you're going to loot, and this is what I said on Facebook, man, if you're going to loot, if you're going to riot, if you're going to, you know, burn stuff, I want you to take that to City Hall. I want you to take that to the financial district. I want you to take that to police headquarters, because that's who hits you. If you're going to hit back, hit against the people that hit you and not burn down your own community.
Yeah, that's the part I didn't like. That was some misguided torturing. And I was just like, why are you going to rob the liquor store? Why are you burning down the O'Reilly's? Like,
yeah,
if you're going to be bad and tough, go to the police station.
Yes.
Otherwise, you have to live in the city the next day. So you're doing yourself no good. Or even better, I shouldn't say this, you know, if you're going to do all that, do it in the next town over. Why are you going after your own town? You know, when people compare it to the 92 riots in Los Angeles here, a lot of the rioting that was done here was very targeted. It was targeted towards non-black businesses.
Yeah.
So my Korean brothers and sisters were the target of a lot of the riots because they were sniffed out, and a lot of their businesses were looted and torched, to the point where, you know, people were putting up signs to identify themselves as a black-owned business so they would be spared. So it was a little bit different situation here where, yeah, people will see the riots, but, you know, there's a little bit of strategy deep down, I think, in terms of how they went about things.
I agree, and it's like, you know, one of the most disturbing and sad things to me last night was when Red's Barbecue got burned down. And I've never been to Ferguson. I don't know who the hell Red's Barbecue is, but you could just hear in the voice of the commentators and in some of the people in the crowds when they realized that Red's was getting torched. It's like, you know, wow, this is where, you know, people in the community came after the first thing and it kind of came together. And Red's is kind of a victim without doing anything. And so to me, it's like, yeah, if you're going to be that bad, I want you to organize and march from Ferguson into St. Louis or wherever you feel that the power lies in your community, in your region, and make a statement there, because all you did last night was set your own community back.
And not to make this a political talk, but our president, you know, this whole situation, I don't think he's handled it pretty well. He's sort of been hands off.
Is there a right way, though? We talked about this last time. Like, is there a right way for him to handle it?
Hey, you got to show up.
Well, let's flip that, though. Because you can say there's a right way to handle it, but is there a way for him to handle it without already aggravating a flammable situation?
Yeah, he can show up and he can, you know, forget that he's the president for a minute and remember that, hey, deep down he's a black male and he could have addressed this situation better. I mean, look, he's not going back to an office. He can piss people off. Who cares? His job is secure. He could have been there. And I think if he could have been on the ground, and of course, you know, secure, because we don't need something to happen to him. But if there's a situation where he could be secure and in Ferguson, I think if the president was there, that would have defused a lot of this, what happened last night. Don't you think?
I don't know, man, because I think as an abstract idea in a vacuum, yes, I agree with you. But I think when you get into the logistics of the president of the United States and that president in particular, stepping foot in Ferguson, I think everything becomes even more amplified. I think everything becomes, and not necessarily saying that it's his fault, but I think that the chaos that ensues is going to be that much more ratcheted up, not just from the side of the people within Ferguson, but in terms of nationally. I think he's so polarizing, and it's not his fault, but it's a hard decision. I don't envy that choice that he had to make.
Yeah, I feel like he gets a pass from black people because he's the black president, but I haven't been impressed with what Obama's done from day one with Ferguson. You know, he's done all these one-off press conferences from D.C., which is great and all, but, you know, has he ever been to Ferguson yet? Has he made a trip out there? Once?
I think he was out there once. But for the most part, he sent Holder.
Yeah.
And other aides out there. But, yeah, like, it's interesting because I think as me, as Nate, or you, as Marcus, we know where we'd be. You know, we'd be out there on the front lines, so to speak. But at the same time, that's the fact that we would be there and we would integrate ourselves into that situation is probably why we would never be president.
Yeah, but you would think, you know, this is one of the perks of having a black president, no? You would think going into this 8 years ago that when Obama, or 6 years ago when he was elected, you would think one of the perks of having a black president is if a situation like this were to happen, we know he would have our side. And I feel like he's playing it right down the middle, which is fine if it's election year, but you're done. You're out in 2 years. How about you step it up? If this was Chicago, I'd be curious to see if he would have been more involved. Granted, you could point the finger that there's a lot of stuff going on in Chicago that he's been hands off in. So, that's enough political talk. I don't need to tweets or emails about.
Yeah, real quick, last thing on that. Like, I would tend to agree, but I also think, man, it is a no-win situation because it reminds me of the Vine that was posted last night where there was a black police officer who mm-hmm. was on the front line, you know, in the armor and had the shield and everything. And there was this older black lady who was just in his face and just yelling at him, just, you know, how does it feel to support the same infrastructure that oppresses us? And I'm saying it a whole lot nicer than she did. And, you know, I could see the shame in your eyes that, you know, you're not even a man and this and that. And it's like, if that police officer feels a conflict, how much more would it be for the president where, yes, I'm sure that there's a part of him, maybe a big part of him, I don't know, that identifies with the struggle. But at the same time, in order to change things, you got to go so deep because it's not a Ferguson thing. It's not a Trayvon thing. It's not going back to the 90s, a Rodney King thing. It's an America thing. And in order to fix it, you got to be like, hey, America, we have been set up from the get up. This whole thing is fucked up. And we got to do some real decisions here. And I don't know, like, I'd love for him to do that. But I don't know if, A, he's that kind of dude, or B, like, it's, like, to ask somebody to do that, like, granted, you're the president, but to change, like, you got to fundamentally change the whole system if you want to get things fixed.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I understand what you're talking about completely. And Jessica Danielle, one of the people I follow on Twitter, she was going in on the president and like, yeah, I understand your feelings, but it's like, at the same time, like, I could do it and you could do it because we don't give a damn. But as the president, you kind of have to give a damn.
Yeah.
So that's where we ended. Just thanks. Like America. No answers.
Thanks, Barry.
Rest in peace to Marion Barry, by the way.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, not a good week for black people.
No, the trash mayor, according to TMZ.
Yeah, I could make a social comment and say not a good past 200 years for black people, but we're not going to do that.
We got Oprah.
We got Oprah. We had Oprah and Jordan, man.
Yeah, Chicago.
It's a good run. But you know what, Marcus? I think we're going to lighten the mood. We're going to switch gears for a little bit and talk about sports, man. So coming up next, Adrian Peterson.
You said lighten the mood.
More Kings of Sport right after the break.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Generations of good people and cycles of poverty. It bothers me, so I ask myself, I say, are you doing as much as you can for the struggle? No. Am I doing as much as I can for the struggle? No. Then why do I cry when my people are in trouble? No. My ancestors slapped me in the face and said,
go!
Harry Tubman told me to get on up. Marcus Garvey said to me, bring you get on up. My brother Malcolm X need our name more. It ain't like we never seen blood before. Come on, let's talk revolution.
Intellectually stimulated? Well, tune in every other week for the Atomic Podcast, where we bring you news, reviews, interviews, along with my co-host, Eve the Cat and Sannon.
That's right, E. Tune in every other week, soundcloud.com/theatomicpodcast on your mobile devices.
It's time to talk about the sport of kings with the Kings of Sport. It's your Pigskin Preview. your Gridiron Gabfest, and your weekly football focus, it's time for Second Down on the Kings of Sport.
It's the sport of kings, better than nodding rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow, referee's whistle blows. Weekend warriors toe-to-toe. Football.
We are back. It is Nate and Marcus, and welcome to Race Wars. Oh, my bad, wrong podcast. Race Wars, great podcast. Shout out to Kurt Metzger, Sherrod Small. Check them out after you get through checking us out. But if you're hearing that music, it must be time for segment two, our weekly football fix. And Marcus, coming off of last segment, I think, we're going to talk about some fun stuff today. Right?
Sure.
If your definition of fun is Adrian Peterson, Roger Goodell, and Richard Sherman.
That's not as fun as Sting, but it'll do for now.
No, we'll get to Sting. Obviously, if you're listening to this on your iPod or your smartphone, you can see the time left in this show. So there's at least an hour left in this show, I'm guessing, right now. So there will be some talk about that man called Sting in the coming segments. But for right now, we're going to start with the NFL. And unfortunately, Adrian Peterson is, if you thought he was unsympathetic before, his tweet in the wake of the Mike Brown verdict makes him an even less sympathetic figure. But I don't think that dilutes the real issue when it comes to his suspension, Marcus. And, for those that, I'm talking like everybody knows, but for those that did not hear the news last week and all the goings on with AP, let them know what's going on.
Yeah, so AP will not be playing football this season. He's been suspended for the rest of the 2014 NFL season, and he has to apply for reinstatement for next season with the commissioner, Roger Goodell. And he was told he needs to show remorse for his actions. And this all stems from the child abuse case for him disciplining his child.
Now, Marcus, if you know me for you know me for a while off the air, but in terms of our working relationship here at the Kings of Sport podcast, you know me for going on a year.
It's more than that.
Almost
2 years.
Almost 2 years. Yeah. Numbers aren't my thing. You should know that by now. The other thing you should know is I don't usually cuss on this program.
You don't. That's usually me.
Yeah, that's usually you. But I will say, this ruling to me is bullshit. Like, you know, I teased it last week. Like, I don't care what you think about Adrian Peterson. Like, you know, I think we can all agree as a society that the damage done to his son that we saw with the photographic evidence is not cool. It's not something that should be acceptable. But you can have a reasonable discussion on disciplining your kids through spanking. Like, we can have that discussion. But for this man to not only lose 8 games, but to lose the entire season, and then he has to go back to the commissioner and ask to be reinstated next year, the very same commissioner that doled out the punishment in the first place, it's bullshit. Like, that's how I feel about him. Like, I rarely get passionate about stories like this, but this is something that actively made me angry last week.
Yeah, I was a lot surprised that this was the ruling, considering he did sit out 8 games. You know, he got paid. He did sit out. He, you know, followed all the rules. And, you know, this is what happens when the league sort of plays fast and loose with the rules and how they want to handle situations like this now, because 2 years ago, even last year, if this were to happen, Peterson would be playing by now. He wouldn't even be forced to sit out, I believe. I think that they would have actually respected his court date, let him go through the actual process, and, you know, if he took the plea deal for the misdemeanor, whatever it was, it was a plea case, right? He took a plea?
Yeah.
So I think that would have been fine, but because of Ray Rice and how that was fumbled by Roger Goodell, now all of a sudden the rest of the league has to pay as a result, and that's not very fair.
Yeah, and just as an aside, to anybody that on the one hand will tell me, hey, Nate, you know, with this Ferguson verdict, with this Mike Brown verdict, you know, you got to respect the decision of the justice system, but at the same time, you want Adrian Peterson to be sitting out and you didn't want Mike Vick to come back to the NFL? Shut the hell up. Your opinion is no longer valid with me because Adrian Peterson took a plea deal, was a misdemeanor that he was charged with.
Yes.
And so it's like, okay, in the court of law, in the justice system, this incident is done with. And so the NFL suspended him for 8 games with pay, like you mentioned. But, I mean, if you want to fine him, I'm cool with that. But to say that he cannot play for the rest of the season and then to go over the top and say, you got to ask your way back and beg your way back and show us that you're contrite, which I don't know if anybody can truly be the judge of that because we don't know what is anybody else's heart and mind. That's ridiculous to me. And then the other thing is, D'Amore Smith, come on, man. I'm going to need you to sit down, brother, because D'Amore Smith and the Players Union had plenty of time during Roger Goodell's tenure to say, hey, this is not what we agreed to. This is not what we should be doing. The players and the owners and the league are supposed to be partners, and there are things that are collectively bargained, and you just going all willy-nilly with the rules is not what it's all about. If you want to change the rules, cool, but you need to bargain that with us. And for him to step up now, like this is the straw that broke the camel's back when this has been Roger Goodell's MO for pretty much his entire run as commissioner, it's almost laughable.
You know, you mentioned the Mike Brown comparison. Let's just say, you know, the Darren Wilson thing. Let's just say the Ferguson Police Department said, not so fast, Darren, you're suspended for a year. I would sort of understand why he'd be upset too, because according to the law, he was found not liable of this, yep, of this murder. So we got to treat it like as if nothing happened, and you got to move on. And the same
and, you know, if they did that, if they said, hey, you're back, but you're suspended for a year, do you know how hard Fox News and people on that side of the ledger will be riding for Darren Wilson?
Yeah.
Like, this is egregious. This is unconstitutional. It's not right. But when it comes to Adrian Peterson, because he's an athlete that gets paid all his money, people are like, oh, what's he complaining about? He gets to stay home and get paid. Like, come on, man. That's not what it's all about. Like, money is cool, but if you are somebody that's dedicated your life to this thing, like Adrian Peterson has, you know, I'm not going to say he would play for free markets, but I bet you that he would much rather give up some cash and be able to play than to sit out and get paid.
Definitely. Is he suspended without pay or with pay? Let me see here. So I know he got paid during the
8 games.
The secret commissioner list he was on.
Yes, which is, like, this whole thing with Goodell, man. Like, I know people were all behind Goodell when he first came in, and he was, like, the old gunslinger cleaning up the league. But it's a very slippery slope when you grant powers to people without checking them. There's a reason why we have three branches in the American government, because there's checks and balances. And when you give Roger Goodell the power to be judge, jury, and executioner, it's real suspect. I know you're not a movie buff, Marcus, but did you see the Star Wars prequels?
I've seen all six Star Wars movies.
Okay. So you know how my man Palpatine, you know, things was going crazy with the trade union, and it was like, hey, man, Palpatine got some good ideas. Let's give him some more power. How'd that turn out?
Not too well.
Not too well. So I don't see why we're like, oh, Roger Goodell, just because you did a good thing on case A, case B, case C, you know, I don't see why people are so gung-ho to be like, man, he got to clean up the league. Let's give him all these additional powers that have not been collectively bargained between the Players Association and the NFL.
That one is hot fire.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope, and it's a dangerous situation for future guys who are going to find themselves having to meet in front of Roger Goodell and hoping for some leniency on these cases. You know, Greg Hardy is another guy who's been sort of forgotten about, but he will eventually have to have that meeting with Roger Goodell once they figure out his situation. But he's been sitting out. Who else is on that secret list? It's Ray Madonna never got on the list because his case hasn't gone to court yet, I believe. And then Alden Smith got, what, 9 games?
Yeah.
For his dumbass thing. So, yeah. Yeah, you know, these guys, they better learn because you don't want to be, you know, if they're willing to sit a guy like Adrian Peterson, one of the faces of the league, and going into the season probably one of the top two running backs in the league, if they're willing to do this to him, then, you know, Joe Schmo on the Detroit Lions, he's got no chance.
And I don't know, Marcus, why we're after the Ray Rice stuff, I don't know why we live in a world where Roger Goodell still has this power where he can, you know, he came out last week with that stupid statement like, well, you know, if Adrian had come and talked to me, maybe we could have worked some things out. Why am I going to talk to you when you're making the rules and you're changing the rules? What good is that going to serve me?
Well, he's got the power because from the owner's perspective, they're still making money. And as long as they're making money, they're not going to call for Roger's head. Even the Vikings didn't really want to pay Peterson. They were trying to find a way to shed that contract. And I think there's even stories about the Vikings actively trying to sort of push for a Peterson suspension because they didn't want him to come back and to deal with all that. So,
and that's where it gets real incestuous because yeah. I think, like, if you're going to have a governing body that decides punishments and fines and stuff like that, I'm all for it. Like, I don't want a league full of criminals, but I think that the person that makes those decisions has to be independent. It can't be somebody that's down with the owners. It can't be Roger Goodell. It's got to be somebody that looks at it from a legal standpoint and says, okay, this is the law. This is the punishment that should be doled out.
We can both agree that he should stay off Twitter, right, forever?
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. That's the one fight. That's the suspension I will agree with. AP, you suspended from Twitter for the rest of the season.
If you didn't see the tweet, he sent it out Monday night after the Ferguson decision came down, and he said, the grand jury decided not to indict me, too. But that changed a week later. Maybe, but not likely in this case. # put your trust in God, not in the world. Didn't God create the world?
Like, I know what he was saying, but don't say it. Don't say it. Like, I saw it on Black Sports Online. I was like, what did he say? Before I even saw the tweet, I'm like, oh no, what did he say? I just read the headline and I clicked on it and I'm like, this is going to be really, really interesting because the other part of the NFL, which we'll talk about here in a second with Richard Sherman, is that the NFL likes to do a good job of whitewashing, no pun intended, its athletes. Like, they like to strip the personalities down. And these are just guys that go out there and play for the love of the game and they're good teammates. And any show of personality, the NFL, they might not explicitly frown upon, but it's implied that, hey, we don't need those problems. And it's like, now you've got a guy that can't play football for the rest of the season, and what do you think he's going to do? He's gonna talk. And the most prominent venue for him to talk is on social media. And I love Adrian Peterson as a running back. He's won me many fantasy football games in the past, but nobody's going to confuse Adrian Peterson with a great statesman. And when you got somebody speaking from an emotional standpoint, you're going to get, this ain't going to be the last dust up he has, I think.
No, he's not a Rhodes Scholar. Let's just leave it at that. We'll leave it at that.
But yeah, it's like, you know, what are you expecting from these guys? Now, again, that leads us to the next issue before we get into our picks challenge, and that is,
speaking of a Rhodes Scholar,
perhaps the greatest press conference I have ever seen in my life, not counting Dennis Green's We Were Who They Thought They Were, not counting Allen Iverson's We Talking About Practice Man, and not counting Jim Mora's Diddly Poo, and I'm talking about Richard Sherman.
Don't forget Dud Baldwin. Dud Baldwin, yeah. Dud Baldwin played an equal role in this.
Dud Baldwin put in some work with this. I mean, for those that have not seen this press conference, that came on the heels of Marshawn Lynch and the troubles he's had in press conferences. Let the people know what went down out in Seattle. Was it today?
I believe it was today, yeah.
Yeah, let them know what went down with Richard Sherman today.
It's Richard Sherman at the podium and a cutout of Doug Baldwin in uniform as Doug Baldwin stands behind the cutout, crouching down. And it's Sherman interviewing the cutout version of Doug Baldwin, and Doug Baldwin is in the background giving answers. It's brilliant.
It is.
It's not a cost of money, but it's brilliant.
Yeah, and again, this stems from Marshawn Lynch, who 1 week was fined for not talking to the media. I think he talked to one person.
Yeah, and then last week he talked not much, but he talked.
Yeah, last week he pretty much hit the Rasheed Wallace button. Where remember that interview, that great post game interview where Rasheed was just like throwing out one word answers.
Yeah,
and Marshawn took it to another level, and he got fined for that. So now it's like you got Sherman coming out, and he's like, "Hey, the NFL wants us to talk, but they don't really want us to talk."
You know, I'm glad that there's really not anyone who is going after Lynch for doing this, because we could point to Popovich and what he does. Even though that's a little different, because, you know, that's in-game, and I can understand why coaches would not want to take part in that. He does talk post-game. But when you look at guys like Belichick and Popovich to a certain extent, they're notorious for not really playing nice with the media. So why should these athletes, and this is coming from someone who's in the media myself, if they don't want to talk, why should they be forced to give these post-game interviews like this, you know?
Yeah, not only is it bad for the athlete, and Marshawn Lynch, I think it's documented he's got some anxiety issues, some social issues, in terms of kind of like Ricky Williams, where he's not quite comfortable in big crowds and group settings. But then the other thing is, for the reporter, from their standpoint, you don't want to waste your time talking to a guy that doesn't want to talk to you.
Yeah. And, you know, I think he needs to be available at some point. I'm not saying that they should shut out Marshawn Lynch totally from talking to the media, because as a media person, that's going to make your job a lot harder. But maybe he's only available at the press conference podium. He's not available in the locker room. I don't know how they would do that, and, you know, how that would be determined, but they should probably look into that whole setup with guys, you know, having to sit there in front of their lockers and address the media, because clearly for some guys it's fine, but for some guys like Marshawn Lynch, they want no parts of it.
Yeah, I mean, think about it from your perspective. Like, if, you know, after every time you edit an article on Yahoo, somebody's like coming up to your desk and like, Marcus, I like the way you did the capitalization on that article, but, you know, some people are saying your punctuation isn't as good as it used to be. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
Like, if you had to deal with 10 to 15 questions, and let's be real with it, half of those questions are probably stupid or at least repetitive. You know, it's like, I get that you want these guys to be accessible to the public, but at the same time, you know, there is a line in terms of respecting the athlete where it's like, hey, granted they're getting paid more money for a game than we could see in a lifetime, but that doesn't make it okay to put them in situations where they're, you know, none of us would want to be put in a situation where we're out of our comfort level to that extent where, you know, you're Marshawn Lynch and, you know, you're having panic attacks about doing an interview.
Yeah. So it was a hilarious interview, and I'm sure.
So do you think Richard Sherman gets fined more than Baldwin? Because, I mean, Baldwin was kind of, to me, Sherman was the mouthpiece, but it wouldn't work without Doug Baldwin.
Nah, I think Baldwin gets the brunt of the fine.
Like, if you haven't seen it, I'm sure it's on YouTube by now, but yeah, Sherman's up there talking, and there's a cardboard cutout of Doug Baldwin with Doug Baldwin crouched behind the podium. And my favorite part is when they leave and Baldwin pops up and he's like, "All right, y'all."
And this is why Pete Carroll is my favorite coach in the league, because this wouldn't fly under Belichick. Belichick would not have this, but I think Pete understands and, you know, he's willing to let these guys be themselves and, you know.
That's the other thing, like, from a media standpoint, it's like, and I'm sure you've dealt with this even more than I have, Marcus, it's like people, in terms of the consumers of this, in terms of the viewers, in terms of the fans, they want to hear from the athletes. But do they really want to hear from athletes? Because I've already seen on Twitter, people are like, oh, why is Richard Sherman complaining that the NFL's got sponsors, but he can't, you know, pimp his own products? It's like, you really don't want to hear what these athletes have to think.
The athletes are black, right? there's your answer.
That's the other thing, man. And damn it, we've already opened the Pandora's box, but man, how come Gronk and Watt and Wes Walker, to an extent, can get up there and be crazy and act a damn fool? And everybody like, oh, man, that is just so refreshing. But let a brother get up there and act a damn fool, and it's like, what? He is disrespecting the game.
Well, this goes back to Richard Sherman and Aaron Andrews last year and that heated debate with Alfred and myself about her being scared.
So you're saying Alfred was right. Now you're conceding the point.
No, I'm not conceding the point. I don't think Aaron Andrews is scared at all. Was it a poor interview? Sure. But yeah, was she scared and afraid? No. Come on.
My thoughts on that was, yeah, I don't think she was scared or threatened. I just think she's bad at her job. And that's just my opinion of her as a reporter.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is very interesting, man. It's like, You really don't want to hear what these guys have to say. Like, I'd love it if everybody was as candid as an Allen Iverson or as candid as, you know, on the other side of the ledger, as a Gronkowski. I love Gronkowski's post-game interviews, but if we're going to celebrate one guy, you know, sometimes coming across as a gas bag, then, you know, let's celebrate them all.
Yeah, so... It's time for picks.
Yeah, I was going to say, and with that, let's get to our picks. did we do last week, and what's the season standing?
Last week, we both went 2-3. That's another 2-3 week for me. Not good. So, overall, after 12 weeks, I am 34-26. You are 32-28.
Oh, closing the gap.
It was the same amount as last week, 2 games.
Yeah, but if I say it like that, it makes it seem like I'm making progress.
Yeah.
So I'm closing the gap, Marcus. Oh, how about them Falcons, by the way? 6-9, and we are going to win the division. I'm calling it right now.
There's a story on Yahoo that explains how all four teams can go 5-11 in that division. And it will host a playoff game as a result.
And Atlanta will win.
I don't know what the scenario is for the tiebreaker, if that were to happen, how that's going to shake out. But, you know, Tampa Bay is the only team, probably the only team in the league that is in the running for the first pick in the NFL draft and is also in the running for the NFC South division. So
that'd be awesome if they made the playoffs and still had a top five pick.
Yeah, this is, I don't know what happened to the Saints. I mean, they had 3 straight home games, lost all 3. They're now 4-7 with the Falcons. Carolina's 3-7-1, and Cam Newton looks awful. And then the Bucs are 2 games back, only at 2-9, and they haven't won a home game this year.
You know, as much as I talk about Atlanta going winless for Winston, I think Tampa Bay might actually be the best spot for them.
Because it's close to...
In terms of a fit between a organization and a player, like they need, like you can't go forward with McCown or Glennon if you're Tampa Bay. I think Lovey is a coach that is not going to put up with the bullshit. And I think that if Jameis is serious about the business of playing football, that might not be the worst fit for him.
I'm not as down on Glennon as you might be. I don't think he's awful. I think there's enough talent there to.
I don't think he's awful either. I just don't know if he's the guy going forward. And as we've seen in the NFL, you know, if you're not going to be the guy going forward, it might be better to just cut bait right now.
Yeah, but when you, I don't know how much that McCown contract was, but I know it was a multiple year deal, so I'm not sure how much they're on the hook for, but they spent, well, in theory, they spent a lot of money on a 35-year-old quarterback, so.
The other thing for Lovie, man, like, I know, you know, people aren't outright blaming Lovie for this, man, but he's not going to get the longest leash. And at least bringing in Jameis, that buys you, you know, a little bit of time for him to develop.
Not necessarily.
I think Jameis buys you more time than going another year or two at Glennon. Like, I think people have already made up their minds, rightly or wrongly, about what Mike Glennon is as an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why they're 2-9 is not so much the quarterback situation is, you know, they've had some bad luck at running back this year with Doug Martin being in and out of the lineup.
Tell me about it. Worst draft pick ever.
Oh, you have the pocket hamster? You drafted him?
Let me tell you, I have had to piecemeal and patchwork so many running backs by committee off of Doug Martin. I drafted him in the second round.
Wow.
Like, the only thing to save me was I was able to get Eddie Lacy in a trade. And, like, every week it's been, like, Eddie Lacy and, you know, random running back from the Patriots. Eddie Lacy and random running back from the Steelers. Like, Mike, I haven't put Doug Martin in the lineup since week one or week two.
Damn. Yeah, so Rainey's been hurt. Charles Sims finally came back. All right, he had his debut, and now he's hurt again. So they've had some bad luck running back. Mike Evans has flourished all of a sudden at receiver, which is a good sign for the future. So, you know, defensively they have not been good. That's been an issue. So, you know, sadly they're still in the race. They needed a win last week against Chicago, but they get Cincinnati home this week. You never know with the Bengals, which Andy Dalton shows up.
Yeah, and speaking of Cincinnati, let's make that our first pick of the week. Every week we pick four Sunday games and the Monday night game. And since we're getting all racial up in this piece, let's go for some black-on-black coaching with Marvin Lewis and Lovie Smith as the Bengals head into Tampa to take on the Bucks. What's the line?
Bengals minus -4.
Bengals minus -4. Last week they beat the Texans. Take that for what you will. You know what? Give me the Bengals.
I'll take the Bengals.
All right. Next game. One thing we learned last week, Marcus, it doesn't take apparently you don't have to practice to beat the Jets.
Your boy Mike Vitt sucks. So can we agree that now? Can we just say he sucks?
Hey, Marcus, this is not the week for it. This is not. I'm not gonna take any of your Mike Vitt bashing this week, Marcus. Solidarity, brother.
Garbage quarterback.
So let's go with the Bills and the Browns for our next game on Sunday. What's the line?
Woof woof. Bills minus -2.5.
Bills minus -2.5. The Browns beat the Falcons last week, the scrappy Atlanta Falcons. There was some news that came out about Johnny Manziel, what he's on a curfew now.
Yeah, he got into an incident.
this is going to be interesting. Bills are home. Coming off of a win, a big win.
Kyle Orton, baby.
I'm going to go with Hoyer. I'm going to go with Hoyer and the Browns in this one.
I'm going with the Bills.
All right, next game. Let's go with... Oh, we got two big-time games we're going to pick this week. We're going to bypass the Falcons game this week because, you know, we're not about that life right now. But we got two big games left on Sunday. And the first one. The Patriots head to Lambeau to take on the Packers. What's the line?
Green Bay minus -3.
Rodgers and Brady. This could go a long way towards deciding this year's NFL MVP. Who you got?
Give me the Patriots. They've been rolling.
This is like one of those games where either way you don't mind picking the other team.
Yeah.
Like if you said Packers, I wouldn't feel bad about picking the Patriots. And since you took New England, I don't feel bad at all about picking the Packers. I think it could be that close. So I'm going to go Green Bay on that. In our last Sunday game, we're going to go Broncos at the Chiefs in a big AFC West matchup.
Denver -2.5 on the road.
It's way closer than I expected.
The Broncos haven't looked good.
You know what? Give me the Broncos.
Give me the Chiefs.
All right, and our final game, the Dolphins going up against Rex Ryan and those scrappy New York Jets.
They burned me last week picking the Jets.
What's the line?
Miami 5.5 on the road.
That's an interesting spread. Tannehill. I don't know about Tannehill, man. He's interesting to me because some weeks you look at him and you're like, man, this kid's pretty good. Then other weeks you're like, he's merely average. Then again,
he hasn't had many average weeks recently.
Then again, he's going up against the Jets, so he could look like the second coming of Tom Brady against the Jets. I'm not going to put this all on the offense. Granted, the offense is bad, but if you're Rex Ryan, you shouldn't be losing by, 30 points to the Buffalo Bills?
Yeah.
When they didn't get to practice for a week? I'll let you go first.
Dolphins.
I am going to go with... You know, as much as I root for Mike Vick, we are in a competition right now.
That's the Dolphins.
We're in a competition right now where a tie is just as good as a win, because at least I'm not losing ground. So I'm going to go with the Dolphins, and we can both go 3-2 or 2-3, and I'll next week I'm going to come on here and say I'm catching up to you.
I'm gaining ground.
Gaining ground. If I keep saying it, somebody will buy it. So that's segment two. Those are our picks. You can check out the fun each and every week at Facebook, facebook.com/kingsofsport. But coming up next, Marcus, we are going to talk to wrestling artist Rob Schamberg.
Who's this we?
You're not going to come back next segment?
I hate art.
You hate art? Well, I mean... I was going to make a comment about your Jets and not having anything artistic to look at all season, but I'm not going to go there. Because it's time to get happy again. We've had some heavy topics this week, and it's time to talk about the man.
As the great Lisa Turtle once said, what is art? Is art art? So, I hate art.
Man, it's time to talk about the man called Sting, Marcus. So if you don't want to be a part of that, that's cool. But me and Rob Schamberg are coming back next segment to chat about how he got into art, how he got into wrestling, how he combined the two, and of course, that man called Sting. We got all that and more coming up for you right after the break on the Kings of Sport. Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, Sports Talk
for our generation.
Present situation. Take a lesson from our elders. Don't make the same mistake. Let's fill the world with love and get rid of all the hate. Our elders taught us one.
We are back on the Kings of Sport after our first two segments, which were a little bit heavy. Marcus decided to take a break. I think the real reason is he didn't want to hear my Sting fandom. That's going to be evident in this next segment. We've got a special guest on the show. He's supposed to join us last week, but due to the wonders of technology, that didn't happen. But I'm happy to say he's back with us this week. And we've got a lot of great things to talk about with this gentleman. I'm sure you have seen his work, even if you do not know his name. He is somebody that has become quite associated with wrestling as it's currently presented today through his various artwork. He is a Kansas City artist. He is a wrestling fan. And it is my pleasure to bring on to the show right now, Rob Schamberg. What's going on, brother Rob?
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Hey, it is our pleasure. And real quick, just to kind of get things started, you know, I know a lot of people have seen your artwork, and it's obviously, you know, pretty freaking awesome, to be blunt. How did you get started as an artist? We'll talk about wrestling in a second, but just in terms of, you know, finding this talent, honing this talent, you know, how did that get started?
Started when I was 7, and my older stepbrother got me my first comic book. It was an issue of The Incredible Hulk, and we just spent the whole weekend redrawing everything from it. And right from that moment, I knew, yeah, I want to be an artist for the rest of my life. And it just, you know, grew from there. For the longest time, I was chasing a career in comic books and had a little bit of success here and there, but it wasn't ever anything that I was able to do full time. And then, down the line, eventually wrestling took over and it's become, you know, a very good thing.
But you mentioned your wrestling fandom, obviously you're a big wrestling fan, and we can see how that's influenced your artwork. When did you start getting into pro wrestling, and, you know, have you always been a fan? Because I know that a lot of folks, you know, they were big into it in the 80s or the 90s, kind of fell out of it, and sometimes, you know, some people are getting back into it now. But what's kind of been your path watching pro wrestling?
I didn't actually get into it until I was 18, which would have been 98, 99. Like any guy that's just moved out on his own, I was at my parents' house doing laundry. And my stepfather was a fan back in the 60s and 70s, but had, you know, just fallen out. You know, it was more like the local Kansas City wrestling. And he just happened to be flipping through the channels one Monday night and landed on Ric Flair doing a promo. And, you know, he had been watching Ric Flair at Memorial Hall in Kansas City, Kansas back in the day. So, you know, he stopped to watch the Nature Boy, and for some reason it just clicked with me and I was hooked. And the next week, you know, I was trying to find wrestling on Monday night, not knowing that there were two shows or anything like that, and happened to land on WWF Raw at the time. And I just watched every week since.
That's pretty crazy, because it seems like you were getting into wrestling at a time where a lot of people, you know, the Monday Night Wars were kind of getting ready to culminate, and WCW was going to fold in a couple years. And so when you were first starting to get into the sport, a lot of people were kind of exiting the sport.
And that's too bad, because I mean, like, yes, there's the argument that the golden age of anything is when you first got into it, right? Like,
yeah,
the golden age of comics is 13, but not the 1940s. But I argue that period from like 98 to 2000 was arguably the business at its best. Especially WWF's product. They were just firing on every single cylinder. You know, if you look at when I started watching, it was shortly after Edge debuted, and, you know, also shortly after Jericho came over. So you had Edge and Christian going against the Hardys. Pretty soon the Dudley Boys came in, Rock and Stone Cold at their top. You know, there were so many people doing so much really well at the time. It was a great time to get into it.
The greatest And perhaps one of the worst things to happen to wrestling is the internet and the advance of social media, the inability to keep surprises under wrap, which will lead us to our next topic here in a second. But, you know, what are your thoughts, you know, being a fan and that kind of love-hate relationship with the internet?
Well, that's something that all forms of entertainment are facing. It's, you know, not just specific to wrestling. But I can say that I wouldn't be having the success that I'm having today without the internet and social media. You know, that's how my work caught on. If I was trying to start this back in 98, it just plain wouldn't have worked. You know, I wouldn't have been able to have gotten so many people's attention back then the way that I was able to a couple of years ago.
True. And you know, going to the point of the lack of surprises or the inability to keep surprises under wraps, this past week we had the Survivor Series, and arguably one of the biggest surprises or most well-executed surprises that the WWE has given us in a while, and that was the debut of that man called Sting. Did you see the pay-per-view, and if so, what were your thoughts on that angle in particular?
Yeah, I was watching. It was fun. He was one of my wife's favorites when she was a kid. You know, she was all about Sting and Undertaker and Ric Flair, so that was fun for her to and for me to be able to watch her get that experience. It's a little different for me now because I work with the company, you know, so I get to know all these people personally, or at least just like casually. You know, like I met Sting in LA at SummerSlam. He has great taste in art, by the way. But it's really awesome for the fans. Especially, you know, it's something to be excited about, you know, and for anything, again, not just wrestling, anything, it's great to be excited about something.
I agree totally. You know, I'm 37. I've probably been watching wrestling since the late 80s, if you want to go back that far. And, you know, you get to a point, especially as we talk about in this internet age, where you become a jaded fan. And to see the excitement, not only on my face, but my buddy's face. I was over at his house watching the pay-per-view, but also his kids, who had really no idea of who Sting was apart from the video game, just to see genuine excitement about something happening on the TV screen. You know, I thought it was a really cool moment for the WWE.
Yeah, and also a pro for the internet is now you can jump on the network and fall into a Sting hole of, you know, just watching a bunch of classic Sting matches and events. That's cool too.
And I will say I've perused your website and looked at a bunch of the different art samples, and I've always been a Sting fan. You know, your wife and I, great minds think alike, I reckon, because Sting and Ricky Steamboat were always my two favorites growing up. And just seeing the artwork that you got of Sting up there, man, it's very cool for those people that haven't seen it. In terms of making these pieces, like, is there a certain subject that stands out to you in terms of who do you like to draw? Who do you like to paint in terms of the visual aesthetic? Is it about how they look? Is it about the energy they have? Like, as an artist, who gets you excited when you know, oh, I'm going to do a session with Sting, or I'm going to do a session with Taker?
You know, generally it's whoever I'm working on at that moment. But there are guys that are definitely more exciting or more visually interesting than others. And also, you know, with the comic book background, guys like Sting or Taker or the Ultimate Warrior,
yes.
You know, I'm able to go a little bit further and, you know, do different exciting things visually. You know, like there's things that you can do with an Ultimate Warrior portrait that totally fits into the character. Cause it's important to me that it doesn't just look like the subject, but it feels like them, you know, like it captures that energy. So there's something that, you know, there's things I can do with Ultimate Warrior that necessarily wouldn't work with, say, John Cena, you know?
Right. And you talk about that relationship with the WWE. You mentioned that, you know, how did that come to pass? Like how did that happen? And the first time, you know, you received some correspondence or a call or an email from them as a fan, you know, did you mark out at that moment?
Well, I try really hard when I'm doing business to be in a business mindset. So every now and then, like, I'll stop and like, okay, that's really cool. That's really cool. Okay, now back to work, you know? But the WWE relationship came about initially. I was involved and still am with the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Museum in Northern Iowa. Really great organization, very worthwhile thing for the sport of wrestling and of, you know, the sports entertainment part of professional wrestling. A really cool place. And through there, I became friendly with Jerry Briscoe and Jim Ross. Okay. And last year, WWE was going to be coming to Kansas City for SmackDown. And I was wanting to put on a Make-A-Wish fundraising art show in conjunction with that. And reached out to JR to see if he could pass my information along to WWE to, you know, try to, you know, like see how they can be involved in that. He did, and they did, and, you know, it was really good success for Make-A-Wish. But also, without me asking and without even telling me he was going to do it, Jim went the extra step and called some executives with the company and was like, you need to actually work with this guy. And it went off from there. Like towards the end of last year, right around this time, actually, we launched stuff with their WWE auction site with some paintings. And then it's built from there to, you know, like I have my own branded page on WWE shop. You know, like if you go to the categories and like go to the drop down for all the categories, you see Rob Schamberger art is one of the options. You know, that's really cool. But also, you know, I've been able to go and do live art at several events. Like I painted live at WrestleMania Access in New Orleans and also at SummerSlam, and then recently when Raw was here in Kansas City.
That is very cool. Now, a couple weeks ago, it might be 3 or 4 weeks ago now, I'm starting to lose track of time in my old age, man. a couple weeks ago, we had a chance to talk to Brian Shields, the author of 30 Years of WrestleMania. And, yeah, well, you know, he's under that WWE umbrella with yourself. Yeah. And one of the things Brian said, which could be considered a cliche, but I think it's very true, is that if you love what you're doing, then it's not really work. Does that apply to you? Because, you know, you've been able to combine your love of art with your love of wrestling. I know it's pretty cool, but are there times when it's just like, oh, man, I can't figure out how to get this Ric Flair picture just right, and you start beating your head against the canvas? Is it always fun, or are there times when it's like, I just need to kind of step back for a little bit?
Well, it's always better than working in a cube. I did that for a decade or two, so, you know, I had my fill of that. But the way that I say it is that I work really hard so that I don't have to have a job.
Okay.
you know, it is business. It is, you know, like I actually have my own LLC and everything to do stuff through. And there is, you know, like the corporate side of things where, you know, I'm working with WWE on different possibilities. And then also, yeah, there's long hours. You know, it's not unusual for me to have a 12 or 13 hour day, and I work 6 days a week. And even on Sundays, I'm still monitoring email and all my social media channels. So I'm pretty much on all the time, which it's still, again, better than working in a cube, but there's trade-offs still. Luckily, my wife has the same kind of mindset with her work. So we both understand that, like, yes, sometimes we're not going to just sit at home, you know, with some drinks in front of the TV, you know, like we're doing stuff.
And, right.
But yeah, ultimately I enjoy what I do. And if it ever comes to a point where I don't anymore, then I'll just switch it up. But I don't see that happening in the near future at all.
It's like, what's that old line from the movie Car Wash? You may not ever get rich, but it sure beats digging a ditch.
Yeah. Although I would have dug ditches instead of working in a cube.
Oh. we're talking to Rob Schamberger, wrestling artist. You can check him out at robschamberger.com. Rob, in terms of subjects, is there a particular wrestler that was your favorite subject? Or, you know, is it, like you mentioned, you know, the next guy that you're going to do is the most exciting thing to work on?
Well, and again, it's become tough to answer that when I have so many of the subjects that are now, you know, personal friends. Like, why didn't you say me, Rob? You know, like, I'm sure I'll get a call from Hornswoggle afterwards. But I think the one that I have the most personal attachment to was the portrait that I did of the Ultimate Warrior on his jacket that he wore in his final appearance. Not to bring the show down and everything, but that's definitely the emotional number one piece I've done.
And that was, like, I think in the days and weeks after that, like, that, you know, like you said, it's heavy when you're talking about it, but at the same time, do you take some pride in that, knowing that, A, that was what, you know, he wore, but also that people seem to love that particular piece of artwork, and it's been, you know, reposted and shared on social media. Is there some sense of pride that, you know, yes, this is a sad occasion, but at the same time, I'm glad I was able to, you know, bring people some happiness?
It's an incredible honor, and it's one that I don't look lightly on. Like when he's holding the microphone, the little pink square there on his sleeve, that's my signature.
Okay.
Yeah. and that whole experience was amazing. We started talking about 2 months before WrestleMania. His agent reached out to me to see if I'd, you know, be interested, if I had time. I was interested. I didn't have time, but I wouldn't have said that.
Right.
Know? Like, that's you make time, you know, you just give up sleep or whatever to make that happen. And then I didn't hear anything. And then 2 weeks before WrestleMania, and meanwhile, you know, I'm doing quite a bit to get ready for my own thing with Access, because I had my whole exhibit there and was going to be painting live. So I was busting ass all around the clock. But the agent's like, hey, I'm sorry, you know, I had, you know, things come up, but are you still able to do this? And I was like, oh, geez. Like, yes, yes, absolutely. No problem. And he's like, okay, Warrior's going to call you in a little bit. And in the back of my head, I'm still thinking, like, okay, like, this is someone screwing with me,
right?
You know, like, this isn't for real. And then got the call from Warrior, and we talked for like an hour.
What was that like? We were just picking up the phone and having you know, the Ultimate Warrior on the other end.
and also, you know, just calling him Warrior and everything, you know. but he was really passionate. He was an artist himself, so we talked technique, and he told me that he watched my YouTube videos every week, and that he had daydreamed about being in the studio painting with me. I just picture, like, you know, like the Ultimate Warrior, you know, like that took down Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania, like that Warrior, like standing there shaking the painting and stuff.
You guys are having a discussion about watercolors.
Right. And he's like, not enough rocket fuel. you know, he was just like rapid fire throwing off all these ideas at me about the jackets. There were actually two I did. The original plan was for him to wear one at Mania and then one at Raw afterwards.
Okay.
And so not only did I have to get this jacket done within the next couple of weeks, I had to get two done on top of everything else that I was doing, which was already the hardest and craziest stuff that I'd ever done. But I managed to make it happen. Like, he overnighted one jacket to me and then had another one shipped to me. So I actually, the one that he wore, I completed that at about 2 a.m. before I hit the road down to New Orleans.
Wow.
Unfortunately, I never got to meet him in person. Again, we were supposed to meet up during WrestleMania week, but I was so busy. He was so busy. Like, I was working 20-hour days, like legit, no exaggeration at all, 20-hour days. So it was more like napping than sleeping. And I'm sure he was working even harder than I was. Like, they had a house that they rented for him down there that they called the Warrior Compound, which I thought was awesome. You know, like, they were taping all kinds of things because, like, he was going to be coming back in a really big way. And he'd also like, he'd always had it that every appearance he made, he wore a different jacket. And we had, you know, talked that I was going to be the guy doing every one of those jackets.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then the day of the show, after I was done at Access, I was back at the hotel doing some paperwork, and I get an email from his agent again saying like, hey, I'm sure you already have tickets, but would you like to watch WrestleMania from Warrior's private box? And, you know, I just like, I turned to my wife and I'm like, I need you to read this because I don't think this is for real.
Right.
Like, I think I want to, make sure I reply right. And that was just such a super cool thing too, because that, like, originally I just kind of had tickets, you know, like WWE gave me tickets.
Right.
But with this, I was part of the friends and family group. So, like, we had our own bus to get to the stadium, which, like, they had a motorcade. They shut down traffic.
Wow.
For us to get there. And then we had our own entrance. And then there was, like, a private club set up for everyone to hang out and watch the show. And that was crazy. Like I wasn't joking earlier. Like, Hornswoggle is probably my best friend in the business. He's a great guy. So I was sitting there with him and his family watching the pre-show match, like, with the Usos and the Real Americans. And then, you know, just kind of like look around the room, you're like, oh, there's Ric Flair. There's Bruno Sammartino. I was already friendly with Lana and Rusev, so I took my wife over to meet them, you know, before they even debuted the next night.
Right.
And you know, just like all these, it was a who's who, like all the boyfriends from Total Divas were walking around.
was Vincent in the house?
Yeah. He's a nice guy. and then went up to watch the actual show from Warrior's Box, and, you know, talking with his agent, who was a super cool guy, and you know, lots of his other friends and acquaintances. And also, like, I don't know if were you at WrestleMania?
I was not. My co-host Marcus was, and he's like, he had stories for days.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he can back me up on this. When Undertaker lost, there was a tangible feeling in the arena of the air getting sucked out from everyone all at the same time going, like, there was a tangible feeling. I try to, like, you know, like, explain it to people that didn't experience it, and they're like, yeah, whatever. Like, no, it was like an actual physical feeling. It was incredible.
Off of that point, because I think it would make a great print. Did you ever do a painting of that guy that was just so stunned Undertaker fan? Like, I think that'd make a really cool portrait.
I haven't. But again, getting on the serious note, you know, like, we were driving back Monday. We didn't actually go to Raw, you know, because we had to drive back to Kansas City from New Orleans. And so, like, Warrior not coming out with the jacket at Mania, I was like, oh, man, because I'd had a lot of other things in the past that were supposed to happen and didn't, you know, for whatever reason.
Right.
And I was just thinking, like, oh, you know, like, plans changed again. Oh, well, you know, it's still got to have this incredible experience. And then, like, all of a sudden my Twitter starts blowing up. Because it's like a 12, 13-hour drive back. All of a sudden, my Twitter starts blowing up. Like, that's a Rob Schammerger jacket. That's one of Rob's paintings. Huh. I'm like, oh, my God, it's happening, you know? And people start sending me screen grabs, and I was able to tweet it out. And don't worry, my wife was driving. but she starts crying, you know, because, like, we both had worked so hard. And she knew especially how hard I've worked these last few years to make this happen. And so, like, you know, we weren't watching live. We get back home. We, you know, actually watch just the Warrior part because we didn't get home till like 1 a.m.
Okay.
So we just watched the Warrior part and, you know, like, hug and cry and stuff. And then the next night we had the plan to actually sit down and watch Raw. And we were about to get to, like, the next segment up was going to be Warrior. And I get a text from one of my associates at WWE saying Warrior died. Mm. And I'm like, is this like carny talk or something that I don't understand?
Right.
And then I, you know, I jump online real quick and saw, you know, WWE's announcement, and we just sat there for like an hour, just not saying anything and just silence, you know, and then started coming to, and it was tough. Cause also I knew that, Warrior's agent, Steve, his, father had recently passed away too. So, you know, I was just really feeling for him and of course for the family. So also as a thank you for Steve, shortly afterwards, I did a portrait of Warrior wearing the coat from Raw and sent that to him. And I even used some of the same paint that I'd used on the jacket. It's one of my, again, more personal favorite pieces.
Wow. And it's, we said at the time when we had our show, we did a tribute show. I believe that it was either that week or the following week after he had passed. And it was like, you know, it's, I guess the one silver lining would be that, you know, he had a chance to say goodbye, which, you know, nobody gets to script their own ending in life, but, you know, at least he was able to have that moment. His family was able to share that moment with him.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
We are talking with Rob Schamberger, the wrestling artist. Rob, we're going to let you get out of here in a second. But before we do, my final question would be, out of all the subjects you painted, I'm sure you've got great stories for days, great experiences. Is there somebody that's kind of on your list, your bucket list, that's like, oh, man, I would love to paint that one person, and I haven't had the opportunity yet? Is there one person that stands out in your mind?
Well, there's another project that I work on along with this that actually got everything started called the Champions Collection. And what I'm doing with that is I'm painting every world champion from all the major American promotions going all the way back to 1905 with George Hackenschmidt.
Oh, wow.
So it's going to be like 250 portraits when it's all done. And I've done about half so far. So to answer that, it's the ones that out of that I haven't painted yet.
Okay.
And also, again, you know, like so many of these people I've become, you know, like personally acquainted with, the ones that haven't yet won the world title that will, I'm looking forward to painting them as well.
Very cool. Very cool. Yes. I'll already say I'm looking forward to the NWA Ron Simmons painting.
I did it. I was pretty happy with that. That was such an incredible moment too, when he won, like
yes.
People like literally jumping out of their seats and everything. That's why one of the examples of why wrestling is so awesome.
I agree. So Rob, for those that would like to see samples of your work, would like to purchase your work, would like to keep up with what you're doing and with your artwork, let the folks know how they can get in touch with you, how they can follow you on social media.
Sure. The easiest places to purchase art are WWE auctions. That's auction.wwe.com is where you can get originals that are actually signed by the wrestlers. Like right now, we've got Randy Orton and Paul Heyman and Renee Young up there.
Okay.
And then also coming, well, currently on WWE Shop, again, I've got my own category there, and we've got 10 new prints that are going to be going up pretty soon. We also have canvas prints and some posters, you know, pretty good options and price ranges. And robschamberger.com, that's RobschamberGer.com. I have a gallery on there of everything I've done. I've got a separate page just for the Champions Collection. And so you can see what I've done and then who I still need to paint. And also on Twitter, at Rob Schamberger, RobschamberGer. Same on Instagram. Also every Monday on YouTube, on WWE's YouTube channel, I've got the Canvas to Canvas series, where you can watch me paint a different portrait each week, which is pretty fun.
Very cool. And if someone wanted to commission a painting, do you do that as well?
Unfortunately, my workload is so huge that I just can't take on any. Sorry about that. Maybe sometime in the future, but right now I just can't fit it in.
So if you're out there looking for a PN newsprint, you might have to wait a bit on that. Oh, yeah, I'm checking out the Champions Collection right now, and the Ron Simmons looks very cool.
Thanks. Looks, damn.
Yes. That's a great way to go out. Again, thanks to Rob Schamberger, man. Appreciate you putting up with all the technical stuff, but this was definitely a fun conversation.
It was a blast. Thanks for having me on.
All right, folks. That's Rob Schamberger. The rest of my artists, check them out at robschamberger.com. Hopefully, I'll take some time during this break to find Marcus, because we got to get some more stuff accomplished on this show. But stick and stay, because we'll be back with more right after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, we'll be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
Year 1621, pilgrims held their first Thanksgiving feast. They invited the great Indian chief, Massasoit, who brought 90 of his brave Indians. Elder William Brewster said a prayer that went something like this. We thank God for our homes and our food, and our safety in a new land. We thank God for the opportunity to create a new world with freedom and justice. Amen.
We are back on the Kings of Sport. Marcus has returned from his one-segment hiatus. I want to send another shout-out to Rob Schamberger for joining us on the program. You can check him out at robschamberger.com. And it is time for segment four, the segment where we take a look at the ratchetness from the world of sports, pop culture, entertainment, throw it in a pot, make some ratchet gumbo, and serve it up to you hot and fresh. And again, it's myself, the Godfather, Nate Milton, along with the man that I'm sure will be boycotting Black Friday, Marcus Vandenberg.
I forgot to mention this in segment one. This whole idea that by not shopping on Friday, that's somehow going to make an impact. You're fooling yourselves. Don't get your discount on TVs. Go for it. It's all right. It's cool. We won't judge you.
See, me, like, two things on this. One, I don't mess with Black Friday anyway because I hate the crowds. Mm-hmm. I hate, like, I'm not getting up early out of my turkey sleep to run down to Walmart in the middle of the cold in the early morning hours and stand online with some crazy people to get something that I can get for cheaper on Cyber Monday from the comfort of my own home. And for two, yes, there are economic implications that are tied in with the justice system and tied in with the power in this country, but I'm not going to deprive, you know, my nieces or my family members or my friends of a gift on Christmas because I'm trying to make a statement. There are other ways to influence the system, namely through voting, namely through, you know, advocacy. But to me, you know, I'm all for the cause. I'm all for the movement and for the people that are going to boycott on Black Friday, you know, I ain't mad at you, but it's just not something I choose to do.
That's how I felt about the Little Caesars last night going up in flames. You guys, $5 pizza is no joke. Y'all gonna be mighty upset 2 weeks from now when you're hungry. You only got $10. Oh, wait, we burnt it down. So go out, shop, do your thing. This whole Brown Friday stuff, you know.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, man. Like, I'm like, being real with it, Black people, we on the struggle. We on the grind. You going to tear up the liquor store, man? You going to tear up something that's helping us get through this mess?
Yeah.
I need some Kvasia. I need some Hennessy to make it through my weekend. You know, when I get home from work on Friday night, I want to kick my feet up. I want to pour myself a nice cold drink, and you messing it up for the rest of us. Do you know that they're like, on a side note, man, I went out last night when I got off work. It was probably about 10 o'clock, 10:30, something like that. And I went to go see if I could, you know, grab a six-pack or something from the store. Mm-hmm. They were closed here in Newport News, Virginia. The stores closed, like, the verdict came out at 9. The stores were closed at 10. Hmm. Like, the corner stores closed up at 10 because they didn't want no part of that. I'm like, man, this is affecting my life now.
How far are you from Hampton?
I am about a good 20, maybe 30 minutes outside of Hampton, depending on the
street. Oh, not that close. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm close, but I mean, like, depending on, like, what part of Hampton you're talking about. Like, if you're talking about the outskirts of Hampton.
No, like the university.
HU, I'm probably about 20 minutes away from HU.
Okay.
So it's like, I'm not that far, but I'm far enough. Let's just put it like that. But yeah, it's like, man, the stores was closed down at 10 o'clock. They're like, no, we don't want their problems. So I couldn't get me, you know, a delicious six pack because they were fearful of what was going to happen here in Virginia. But that's besides the point, Marcus.
That's enough Mike Brown talk. We're done. We're done now, for real.
Yeah, you know, one last quick point on that. It's like people are on my Facebook or on my Twitter and like, you know, why can't you guys just get over this? And it's like, no, man, this is it's something that, you know, you don't think about every day, but you're cognizant of it. If you're black or brown in this country, you're aware of it. And it's like, yeah, even though this might be a one night or two night or a week worth of news stories for you, but you know, this is kind of the reality that we live with every day and we kind of accept as part of the bargain of living in America.
Yeah. So now we're done for real.
Now we're done for real. Now let's go to the less controversial topic of Chick-fil-A. Hey, guys, remember when Chick-fil-A was in some controversy? That seems like such a long time ago, Marcus.
Yeah, speaking of boycotts. Yeah, don't eat Chick-fil-A. Shut up. It's tasty chicken. Of course we're going to eat Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, I don't care if you're black, white, straight, gay, transgendered.
I can understand why the gay community would not be down with Chick-fil-A.
I can understand, but ain't no gay person turning down a delicious chicken breast fillet sandwich. Come on, man. There are principles, and then there's common sense, and that is a delicious sandwich.
You can find him at Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Nate Mosaic.
I'm telling you, like, you could come out with a story that says the Ku Klux Klan is behind Chick-fil-A and Krispy Kreme, and I'll be there like, huh, that's some bullshit, ain't it?
They weren't talking about me.
No crosses on my lawn. I'll take a number one with cheese, please.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was telling you during the break, Marcus, like, this will be the litmus test. If we get angry comments and people unfollowing us, like, this will be the barometer. But if y'all roll with us, if y'all stick with us, we know y'all truly love us.
I don't think we'll get any backlash minus the minus a smart-ass tweet from, like, Jermaine. Hi, Jermaine. He's good for something ignorant. But besides that, no, I don't think so. I mean, as I was telling you, I really don't know a lot of people who are pro-police outside of people who have police in their family, which I totally understand. But who's out here riding for the cops just for the hell of it?
Yeah, and I'm not anti-police, but I also, like, you got to look at it realistically. Like, this is not a one-off incident. This is something that has gone down throughout the course of American history. So it's like, come on, man. And again, if you have any comments disagreeing with our point of view, you can send that to Brother Henry Thompson in South Carolina. he handles all our mail. Get well soon, Henry, and the Thompson household. But let's get into segment four, Marcus. And we, of course, we mentioned it. We are talking about Chick-fil-A. And, man, I think they might be happy that all of this popped. Chick-fil-A and Bill Cosby probably are the happiest people in the world
right now. We had to touch on Cosby for a little bit, but go ahead.
Again, Marcus?
I told you, yeah. Just one last follow-up from last week.
So, before we get into that, let people know what's going on with Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, so there's a Chick-fil-A manager, where is this, Georgia?
I believe so, yes.
Who released a list of banned terms that they handed out to their employees, and it's a list of slang words that the quote-unquote young people use on a daily basis. We can run through this list real quick here. So it says, you will speak properly when you walk through these doors. These words are banned. And the first one being bae. And someone scratched it out. And the guy, Eric, wrote in parentheses, scratch it out and you lose your employee meals. So
the struggle is real.
Struggle's, hey, hit him where it hurts. So we have bae, we have bruh, we have on fleek, which I didn't know what that meant until maybe 2 weeks ago, because I'm not cool anymore. 0 to 100. In parentheses, every number in between is acceptable.
Wow.
300. G-U-H. Chill, in parentheses, unless we're talking about something that is chilled. Cuz, in parentheses, this goes for cousin and because, say the actual word.
Well.
Ebola. Stop accusing people of having Ebola. Fool.
Was Mr. T working at this location?
Yeah.
You want a sandwich, fool?
About a week ago, unless we're talking about what happened a week ago, but there will be no singing or dancing to go along with that phrase. Anything with or nah, in quotes. Felicia, there is a wedding here named Felicia.
Bye, Felicia.
Boy, girl, slash bi, so Cameron couldn't work it. Chit-fil-A. Yeah. Salty.
Unless we're talking about fries.
Yeah. Ratchet. Childish.
I don't get childish, though. Like, that's an acceptable part of the American
vocabulary. We're old, Nate. We're old. We don't know what the kids are saying these days. Turn up. Even though turnt up is not on here, turn up is on the list.
What if you sell a salad with turnips in it?
They don't sell it at Chick-fil-A. Barely. And parentheses, say it without the weird voice. So maybe that's a Georgia thing. I don't know.
Burly.
I'm legally blind. In parentheses, no, you are not.
That's a personal thing. That's not a crew thing. Yeah. It's like one dude. I'm legally blind, man.
Pop, hold it, dine. I don't know. And the last one being fam.
Now, I will say, I know some of the listeners are like, uh-oh, Nate about to get racial again. I don't think this is necessarily explicitly racial, Marcus. I think this might be a little bit more generational.
Generational, yeah.
Because to me, that's young people talk. And as I mentioned in segment one, if you're 18 to 25, to me, you know, you might be the best person in the world. God bless you. But your generation is full of idiots to me. and slang is a byproduct of that. Like, anytime like people say bae, that gets on my last nerve. Oh,
this is our get off our lawn segment right here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, do I use any of these terms at all?
I know I use fam. I use fam a lot.
That might be the only one.
Fam, chill, I use chill. But it's a different connotation,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, different kind of. Yeah, that's about it. I mean, I'm not going around talking about my hair is on fleek. Like, no. I
What does that even mean?
It means that it's on point.
What the hell is fleek?
I don't know. I didn't know what.
What do you mean, fleek, Marcus?
Let's see what the Urban Dictionary says.
Like grumpy old black man right now.
Yeah, it just says on point. So
why would you go to fleek?
I know it started from this chick on YouTube who was talking about her eyebrows being on fleek, and then it sort of exploded from there. So I think she's really just made it up.
I would say she's a basic chick, but that might get me suspended at Chick-fil-A.
I don't think basic's on the list. You're good.
Yeah, this is crazy. Like I would have not lasted a week at this place, because part of my thing is, hey, man, we making chicken, and this is why I like Zaxby so much, because they let me live, man. Like, if I'm here making chicken, this isn't rocket science. This isn't police. This isn't government. Why are we taking ourselves so seriously?
I'm surprised Live Your Life isn't on this list as well. I salute you, Eric. This is going to help the kids who are 17 and who don't know any better 10 years from now, when they realize maybe I should have professional, even though it's only Chick-fil-A. This is a good habit to start now.
I do not salute you, Eric. I think you're taking the joy out of this workplace. Like, if Zaxby's came to me and said, you can't sing in the kitchen, I don't know what I would do, because that's how I keep my sanity some days, Marcus. Like, somebody asked me, hey, Nate, how long does it take to cook the spicy mushroom? And I'd be like, hey, man, it goes 0 to 100, nigga, real quick. That's part of my enjoyment of my day. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we got these sandwiches called nibblers, man. They're little tiny sandwiches. Mm-hmm. And they'll be like, Nate, how long does it take to cook the buns for the nibbler sandwiches? And I'll be like, just hold on for nibbler buns. And that's how I keep my sanity in that hot kitchen during the day. So, Eric, no, I do not salute you at all. And shame on you for being prejudicial to that legally blind employee you have.
Come on, fam.
I need to chill.
Chill, man.
Bye, Felicia. Mm. Up next, Marcus, I've been waiting a whole week for this. I teased it last week that we were going to have a really funny story about a deadbeat dad. And so, yeah, I'm going to send you a link.
All right.
While I set up this story. And I want you to give me your opinion, your impression of this. I want you to keep it 100, as they would say at that Chick-fil-A location. Yeah, I'm going to send you this link right now, and I'm going to set up the story. Apparently, in, where is this? Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That's Cunningville country, isn't it?
It is Cunningville country.
Uh-oh. Maybe this is Big Nasty in disguise. But apparently there was a gentleman that was delinquent on his child support. And I guess the mother in question called the news to find out what was going on. You know, like out here in Virginia, we got Wavy TV 10, and it's like TV 10 on your side.
Mm-hmm.
It's like investigative reports. They probably got something similar
there
in your neck of the woods, and they just kind of go in and investigate these things. But this brother had a really interesting explanation as for why he couldn't pay child support, why he was a deadbeat dad. And I want you to take a look at this, Marcus.
All right. What?
So, to set this up, Fox 6 Milwaukee went in and asked the gentleman, his name is John McCroy, and they were like, John, how come you didn't pay this child support? And John says, I was ineligible to pay it because I was in a hospital and I died in a car accident. Yes. He said he died in a car accident. The reporter went back and said, you died in a car accident? He was like, yeah, I died in a car accident. And then she was like, well, how did you come back? And he's like, no further questions.
Oh, man.
That is ridiculous. Like,
maybe he died and came back to life.
We're going to post the clip on kingsofsport.com, facebook.com/kingsofsport, so you can check this clip out. But, yeah, just the way he looks at the camera, just like, you know, I was ineligible to pay this because I was in the hospital and I died in a car accident. with no sense of irony or self-awareness at all. And then, like I said, she's like, you died? He's like, yeah, no further questions.
Our people are people, I tell you.
Now, did you know, Marcus, there's more to this story?
No.
Apparently, John McCroy is also a bit of an aspiring rapper.
Of course he is.
And his rap name is Jack It Down.
Jack It Down?
Jack It Down. And obviously he couldn't get a job at that Chick-fil-A, but he is using his 15 minutes of fame to try to make some cash. But the money that he's making off of this, and he's got a mixtape coming out called Dead or Alive. The mixtape, the proceeds for the mixtape are not coming to his kids.
No? Who's getting the money?
Jack It Down. And apparently he's got lyrics on this mixtape like, I like the way you diss me on Facebook and my Instagram saying I lied, but I died.
He's in on the joke. He's happy pulling our lead, right?
I like to think so, but I don't think so, Marcus. Apparently he's facing 5 charges of felony failure to pay child support. He's supposed to pay $100 a month for his 5-year-old daughter.
That's it?
That's it. $100 a month for his 5-year-old daughter. The girl was born on New Year's Eve, 2008. And as of 2009, he has not paid 1 cent towards this child.
Wow. $100 a month.
But get this, Marcus. In November, he was, in fact, in a car accident where he supposedly died. And then the next year, he tried to buy a car in 2010. And in order to do that, he had to show that he was paying on his child support. So he made a payment of $100 4 years ago, got his car, and the child has not seen a dime since.
I don't think she needs to be around this dude. It's not going to help her.
Like, child support is a tricky thing. Like, I've got my own diatribe I could get into on child support and the way that's set up. But in this particular case, come on, man. Or to use the terminology that would be banned at Chick-fil-A, bruh. $100 a month, bruh.
Yeah.
You up on the news talking about, I got to hand it to him, though, man. Like, just the presence of mind. He's like, yeah, I died. Just like, so you died in a car accident? Yeah, no further questions. Like there's a press corps in front of him. It's one person. No further questions, lady.
I'd be real salty if I was his daughter.
McCroy has 3 children by 3 different mothers, and he's apparently has only paid money to the one mother for the $100 so he could get his car in 2010.
That's called the trifecta.
So y'all got Jack It Down out here on these streets free, but Adrian Peterson can't play football.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Maybe if Adrian had died.
By the way, Adrian's dad, twice the amount of kids that this Jack It Down dude has?
But he's paying for him, though, man. He's paying. He may not be the best dad, but at least he's paying.
Yeah, he's paying in more ways than one.
Yeah, man, like, I saw that. I didn't even see the clip. I heard the clip first. And I was like, did I just hear what I thought I heard? And this dude just set up on local TV and said, yeah, I couldn't. I was ineligible to pay it because I died.
Milwaukee, <It's>, huh?
Now, you know what would have made this story even better if all of a sudden they're like, we spoke to his attorney, Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham. And he echoed his client's sentiments. No further questions. But yeah, I just love that lyric, though. I like the way you dissed me on Facebook and my Instagram, saying I lied, but I died. That's brilliant.
That is not on Fleet.
One of his other songs, Marcus, mm-hmm. has the poignant line. What would y'all do if your baby mama put you in the news? I think you would have the blues.
That rhymes. That's not bad.
That's not bad, Jack It Down. That's keeping it 100.
Yeah.
Good job, fam. Yeah, I was waiting all week. This is how crazy things were, Marcus. Like, Adrian Peterson popped off last week. Ferguson popped off this week. We had Sting show up in Survivor Series. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait to tell Marcus about this story.
Then it's Dan Levitard.
Yeah, shout out to the Dan Levitard Show, a quality radio program. But yeah, this is great. This is great stuff. And we needed this week, Marcus. We needed some ridiculous, foolish ratchetness to lift our spirits.
Yeah, this was a pretty serious show. So.
Yeah. So. Coming. Oh, I was going to say coming up next, but we got one more thing left here.
Oh, yes.
This is Thanksgiving, and by the time you listen to this, it might actually be Thursday. And so last week, Marcus and I solicited opinions from the Kings of Sport Nation about things that you are thankful for in the world of sports. And we got some pretty good responses on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Kings of Sport. So Marcus and I are going to give you what we've been thankful for over the past year or so in sports. But before then, Marcus, we're going to get to our listener feedback.
All right, where do you want to start?
All right, let's just alternate. You can start with Efren Guzman, co-host of the Atomic Podcast and friend of the show. What did Efren have to say?
Yeah, Efren said, hey, Nate and Marcus, happy Thanksgiving. What I'm thankful for is sports is basically every New York team, including the bad ones. So,
most of them.
Every New York team, then. He's thankful for all of them.
Oh, now we get one from the aforementioned Henry Thompson in South Carolina, friend of the show. Henry says, hey, Nate and Marcus, what I'm thankful for in sports? Well, we got Sting in the WWE, and my Carolina Gamecocks are bowl eligible. Barely, but I'll take it.
Those same Gamecocks that I picked to make the college football playoff with Michigan State, Florida State. I forget who my fourth team was. Maybe Oregon? I can't remember who my predict. We have to go back and listen to that podcast and see.
How's that working out for you?
I'm going to be probably 2-for-4 if I pick Oregon. So, how's Clemson doing?
Clemson's doing okay. I think I picked Georgia, though.
Oh, that's right. It was Georgia.
Yeah, I was rolling with Georgia, who's got a big game coming up with Georgia Tech. So that'll be interesting. But, yeah, Henry, one of our two South Carolina Gamecocks fans out there, at least two that I know of, Henry and, of course, Cam Powell out there in South Carolina. So shout out to Cam. For those of you that hear the That Was Hot Fire drop in our show, that's Cam Powell.
Yes.
So. Next, Marcus.
Joey Howe. Hey, Brother Nate and Marcus. The thing I'm most thankful for is my Calgary Flames, a team most people wrote off this year, is kicking some serious ass. It's good to see hard work pays off, and it does not take 5 years to rebuild an NHL franchise. Tell Edmonton that. It takes good coaching and a winning culture to get the most out of your team. Thanks for all your hard work, guys. Happy Thanksgiving, and go Flames, go.
All right. And finally, Steve Kassan, friend of the program, who also has a pretty cool series out called Wasted. It's like a cross between a zombie show, but also it's like a pothead, has pothead themes to it. You can check him out on Facebook. I don't know the exact address, but you can just search it. It'll be there. Steve says, Raptors, all this time paying off. We the North. So he's been waiting for that for a while, I guess.
It's the 20th anniversary of the Raptors this year.
That's crazy. 20th anniversary of the Raptors, and you know who I feel sorry for, man? People in Vancouver. Like, anybody remember the Vancouver Grizzlies?
I do.
Big Country Brian Reed.
And they, that was Stoudemire. That's where he started, right? No.
Yeah,
or Toronto.
Yeah, Stoudemire was Toronto.
Who started in Vancouver?
Vancouver,
you had, my Bibby.
Yeah, Bibby and Big Country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was with Dickerson, Michael Dickerson.
How long did that franchise even last in Vancouver? It was like 5 years?
Oof. Too short. I know it was less than 10 for sure.
Let me see. Let me effort this right quick.
6 years.
6 years?
95-2001.
That is like they gave up on that quick. And it was like grand opening, grand closing.
And wow, they were terrible. All 5 years. Wow, 6 years. The most wins they had was 23 wins their final season. 23-59.
Wow. That is terrible.
That's not good.
Oh, but thank you for your feedback. You can leave feedback every week for the show at Facebook, facebook.com/thekingsofsport, and also on Twitter, KOSPOD, KOS_POD. But Marcus, it is time to find out what you have been thankful for this year in the world of sports. Go ahead and let me know what has warmed your cold, cynical heart.
Well, as I was trying to think of my sports teams this year and was running through them, I realized it was overall not a very good year to be, I guess, a sports fan for me. The Dodgers, disappointed again. The Lakers are awful. The Trojans are underperforming again and got spanked by the Bruins again. But there was one team that delivered, and I'm thankful for my Los Angeles Kings for delivering a second Stanley Cup championship to the city of Los Angeles when I really expected them to not win the Stanley Cup anytime soon. But this is now 2 and 3 years for them, and even though hockey is an afterthought in Los Angeles still, it is good to know that that there's a devoted fan base. Small but mighty fan base that has now sold out Staples Center for, I forget what the sellout streak is up to, but I believe it's over 100 games now. So there's a mighty fan base there, and I'm thankful for the Kings and delivering another Stanley Cup to Los Angeles.
Okay, that's a solid choice. I got three things on my list. The first one, you know I had to hit it because it's the most fresh on my mind, and that is the debut, finally, of the man called Sting in the World Wrestling Entertainment Federation. I guess that's what we'll call it.
The WWEF.
Get the F out.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, like, I have no idea where they're going to go with it. Looks like Triple H and Sting at WrestleMania, and Raw wasn't that good coming off of a hot Survivor Series, but at least for that one night, that was a really cool moment. One we don't really get a lot in wrestling. So that's number one on my list. Number two is the NBA in general, whether it's the Spurs winning the title, whether it's LeBron headed back to Cleveland, Adam Silver, like the NBA never fails to intrigue me. I think year round, and maybe it's as the older I get year round, the more I appreciate the NBA. Like it's kind of the perfect season, the perfect sport. Like it's not as long as baseball, not as short as football. You got Barkley and Ernie Johnson and Kenny Smith and the crew at the NBA on TNT. And the NBA is just something that, like, as a fan, as a television watcher, I love the NBA. So that's another thing I'm thankful for. And I guess the last thing that I'd be thankful for is there is a lot of garbage out there in terms of sports media. But there's also some really good shows out there, some shows that challenge you, make you think, make you laugh, entertain you. And one of the shows that I discovered this year, even though I've known of this person for a long time, was Dan Levitard's radio show. Like, I've seen him on, you know, when he guest hosted on PTI, and I've seen him on Highly Questionable, read his work in, what was he, the Miami Herald or the Post or?
Miami Herald.
Miami Herald, yeah, I read his work in the Herald. But I had never heard his show, which apparently, you know, he's had this show for like over a decade.
Yes.
Down in South Florida, and now it's kind of got this national stage on ESPN, and just kind of going and listening to the show, like, it's a really cool, really different sports show. Like, if you're tired of Colin Cowherd or, you know, shows of that nature, which is probably why you're listening to us right now, I think you'll really like the show. You know, it's Dan and his co-host, Stu Gotts, and Bomani Jones sits in once a week. And it's sports talk for, I think, people like myself and probably like Marcus and probably like many of you that love sports, but we're not – like, we don't have the luxury of being diehards anymore because we got real jobs and real lives and stuff that's going on. But for, you know, an hour or two a day, it's a really fun show and it's a fun listen. And, you know, anytime I can hear more of Poppy, Poppy is just great. So those are my choices.
All right. I like them.
Yeah. So lots of good things to be thankful for in sports. Like, we talk so much about some of the bad stuff and the tabloid headlines, but – man, there's a lot of good things out there. Like, one of the things that I will say, as much as I can dislike ESPN sometimes, during the holidays, they really do the pieces well where you get, like, the athletes that contribute to charity or are giving back or, you know, deal with, like, the cancer kids and things like that. Like, it's a really cool thing that I don't think gets highlighted enough during the rest of the year.
Yeah, I would be lying if I told you I was watching SportsCenter these days. As I try not to, so I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I'll put it on the background. Like, it's funny. We can spend, you know, 24 hours a day, damn near, talking about Johnny Manziel or Jameis Winston or you know, Todd Gurley. But then you get a story like was it last year with AJ McCarron and the little black girl that had cancer that he became friends with. Like, I need more of that. Like, I would watch, you know, more of stories of that nature than the 53rd live remote that we're going to see with random talking head standing outside the FSU campus talking about Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
So, take that, media.
Hey.
I was going to say, you're part of the problem, Marcus. Why can't you be like Xavier Woods and make it a new day, Marcus?
Next week, the debut.
Oh, will that make it on our list of things to be thankful for next year?
I'm going to guess no.
I would tend to agree, but we'll give it a week and see. But I'll tell you one thing that I am thankful for, Marcus, and I'm sure our listeners out there in Kings of Sport Nation will be thankful for. Coming up next is the much anticipated interview with Steve Glenwick from TagMeADate.com.
The March are thankful for this guy, right?
Hey, man, love is hard, man. So if you can find somebody to tag in, and you know, sometimes you need. I was trying to think of a wrestling analogy, but I don't even have one right now.
You need someone to give you a finisher?
Bruh. Well, that's coming up next on the Kings of Sports, so stick and stay, because we're going to keep it 100. Steve Glenwick, coming up next. We're up all night to get lucky. We're up all night to get lucky. We're up all night to get lucky. Oh, man. Hey. Present has no ribbon. Your gift keeps on giving. What is this I'm feeling? If you want to leave, I'm with it.
looking for a few good men?
You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall.
Well, your search is finally over. Let's get back to Marcus, Nate, and the show that always gives you the truth, the Kings of Sport, thekingsofsport.com.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
We are back on the Kings of Sport, getting ready to wrap up our Thanksgiving edition of the program. And Marcus, this next segment, this last segment, is something that the people have been waiting for a few weeks now. It's something that we've been excited about, something that we talked about a couple months ago, and now, much like Hollywood Simpson, it is coming to fruition, and we are talking to none other than the founder of TagMeADate.com, Steve Glenwick. What is going on, brother Steve?
What's going on, guys? Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man. You'd be the Vinnie Mac of Tag Me a Date, right? Vince McMahon.
I like to say so, yeah.
Wouldn't he be the Jeff Jarrett, though? Because Jeff Jarrett was the founder of TNA. Vince, he's the owner of WWE, but he didn't found it.
No, that's a good point.
That's a true story.
Yeah, his father. Yeah, grandfather founded it. So, yeah, all right. Good point.
Yeah. As long as I'm not known as the Ted Turner, you know?
Hey, you can be a lot of worse things than Ted Turner.
Ditsy
Turner. Yeah, that's a true story. I'd still be a billionaire, so I'll take that anyway.
Exactly. So, we're going to get into the website and all that good stuff in just a little bit. But of course, obviously you are a wrestling fan. And as Marcus and I have discussed at various points in this program, a big event this past weekend, the WWE held their Survivor Series pay-per-view. I thought it was pretty much a one or two match show, but those two matches were excellent. And we had the WWE debut of that man called Sting. Steve, what were your thoughts on the show? And did you enjoy how they brought Sting in?
I'll tell you what. I've been watching wrestling a very long time. I've seen every Survivor Series. And prior to this past Survivor Series, if anyone ever said if there's a Survivor Series that sticks out, it would be when The Undertaker debuted. And that would be like the first thing you think of. But now this kind of took the cake for me. I don't necessarily think the actual pay-per-view was all that great, but I think the main event was one of the best actual Survivor Series matches that I can remember seeing, and then to bring Sting in that way and kind of tease the possibility of a Triple H Sting WrestleMania match. You know what I found the greatest is that, you know, Sting's music hits, right? Everyone goes crazy. The man comes down to the ring, and the two just have that stare down. Sting has yet to say or do anything, and the entire arena is already chanting, "This is awesome." That right there tells you something, you know? So, to me, I had goosebumps. It was unbelievable. For me, you finally get to see Sting in a WWE ring. That's a big thing. And quite frankly, I would rather see Triple H Sting Mania than I would Sting Undertaker. Not that that has not been a dream match that I've wanted to see, but I think because of where they are in their careers and physically, I think Triple H would be able to carry Sting in a way that Sting will still look like Sting, and it'll still be an amazing match. I don't know that they would be able to do that, Sting and The Undertaker, unfortunately. But yeah, Survivor Series, that match, that was awesome.
I agree. I think that, you know, it speaks to the testament of this guy's legacy in the fact that I'd say maybe half the audience had no recollection of seeing Sting back in the 90s or in the 80s. You know, it's a different audience, but that reaction when he came out, and there are so few surprises. We had a chance to speak to Rob Schamberger this week, and Rob and I were talking about that the wrestling industry these days with the internet, there are so few genuine surprises, and we got one on Sunday.
Well, that wasn't a genuine surprise. I mean, the internet ruined it on Saturday. To be fair.
Well, yeah, I kind of did hear things like Sting was spotted in the area, things like that, but you never really, I guess the way that they presented the entire show and the drama leading up to the main event and the way that they started off the show that way and they carried it through with the backstage segments, it almost made you forget that Sting, that you read that Sting was there. You know, like when his music hit, it never dawned on me that Sting was actually going to come out. You know, especially after seeing Cena get pinned so early, and thank you to the WWE for finally giving, you know, that big, big spot to Ziggler. You know, that's awesome. You know, that really shows that, you know, they're paying attention in certain situations. But yeah, I you know, it's, you got to remember it too. Sting is the guy that made it to where he is without the WWE machine. You know, like, he became as big as Hulk Hogan. He was Hogan in WCW before Hogan ever got there. To be able to do that and still be relevant. I mean, even the little kids, you know, they seem to know. Maybe the network has a lot to do with it. But it's exciting. It's exciting. And I think people are wondering, you know, are we only going to see one match, like one Mania match? Or I think you're going to be surprised. I think Vince is about dollars. Vince is about what's going to make money. And I think Sting has been able to prove that he can sell. And he can put people in the seats and he can sell merchandise. Which means Vince can make a lot of money. And I think you're going to see Sting a lot more than we actually think we're going to.
I agree. I think in terms of the reports that were out there, yeah, they were out there. But, I mean, how many other times over the course of this past year have we heard reports Sting is going to show up? Sting was spotted at an airport. Sting is in talks. You know?
And this was pretty definitive from what I saw on Saturday. And if you go back to the match and watch the main event towards the very end, you'll see the people in the front row who are constantly looking up at the rafters. And I guess they thought maybe that's how he would come down. But I hope we never see that after the Owen Hart situation. But I going back to genuine surprises, it wasn't like The Rock on Raw a couple of months ago where I thought that was more of a genuine surprise. But I mean, and that's our fault for being on the internet.
Well, do you know the story with that? Do you know the story with that, with The Rock?
No, the Brooklyn Independence.
That Raw?
No.
It really was a surprise to almost everybody. From what I've been told, it was all coincidence. The Rock was actually in New York doing some kind of promotion for, you know, some movie. So he actually hit up Vince earlier in the day, like late afternoon, and was like, hey, I can be in Brooklyn in 2 hours. And the only people that knew were obviously, you know, Triple H, Vince, and Stephanie. Apparently nobody else knew. That's why there was nothing on the internet until moments before when The Rock just started tweeting 3, 2, 1, and then he showed up.
Do you know if Rusev
awesome,
knew?
But, huh?
Do you know if Rusev knew?
That's a good question. I honestly don't know the answer to that.
That'd make it even funnier.
Would actually be funnier. Well, yeah. I mean, but that's the best way, you know, and that's why, like you just said, you know, you felt like it was a real surprise. It really was to almost everybody, even the announcers. Like, those were all real reactions. They weren't told ahead of time that he was coming out because they wanted, you know, Lawler and Cole to freak out on the mic. So,
and I think the really cool thing with Sting is, you know, one of the criticisms that people have lobbied at him, which I don't fully buy into, is that, you know, he was a star in WCW, but he wasn't a draw. And you look at the financials of that company and how it was mismanaged for a lot of its run. And it's like, how many guys really could have been stars in that capacity? But I think now you get a chance to see Sting. He might not be in his prime, but you get to see that WWE machine behind him.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I really do stand by what I said. I feel, as a kid watching both, and even going back and watching him now, Sting was the Hulk Hogan of WCW. You know, he was as big as Hogan in WCW, you know, and then when Hogan came over, obviously that kind of shifted a little bit, but it really, it did and it didn't, because Sting kind of reinvented himself and then, you know, started doing the Crow stuff, and which was awesome, but he was able to stay relevant, and then he was kind of neck and neck with Hogan in WCW, especially when Hogan turned heel. It was perfect. But
yeah. Even in TNA, like, I know it was a much smaller scale, but even in TNA, as a 55-year-old dude, you know, he was putting in work.
Yeah, no, he put on some phenomenal matches in TNA. You know, but you can see a difference, of course. But that's going to happen. But, you know, I think he's in better shape than The Undertaker is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, at the end of the day. So, you know, give him, I mean, listen, he deserves to have a Mania match. We all know that. And he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. You know, and this, it's going to happen, which is awesome. Just a matter of how we're going to get there. How many times are we actually going to see him? And, you know, I mean, listen, we had the anonymous general manager come back to life, because I guess everyone forgets that Hornswoggle was the anonymous general manager. But apparently Law and Order will be restored. So that kind of opens it up. Well, Sting would be a perfect general manager.
See, I think he's going to end up in that role, but I don't think we're going to see him take that capacity until after WrestleMania. I think, and I was telling this to Marcus, that I think that might be the stakes for the Triple H match.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Like whoever wins gets to be the GM going forward. I think then you'll see Sting in that capacity. And I think that's, you know, that's a good role for him, you know, where he doesn't have to wrestle. He can show up, you know, he doesn't have to be on every single show, but he can show up at important moments, kind of like Jack Tunney or Linda McMahon would do back in the day.
I think that's actually brilliant. And then you could have Sting kind of, you know, go to Cena and be like, look, do this for me, you know, let me put it on the line, you know, that kind of deal. Because right now Cena is the only one that can give them their power back. So you'd have to tie Cena in, but that's easy. That sounds pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, so what do you think about that, Marcus? You down for that?
Yeah, I'm down with that. I just think that might sort of limit a second match, possibly. But, you know, I think it's all going to tie into when he gets inducted into the Hall of Fame. And yeah, it would make more sense for them to do it next year if they actually do Dallas, to do it where he lives, as opposed to doing it to a city where there's no real connection to. You know, plus I would love to see Savage get in this year, finally. So
yeah,
it would make sense to do both of those guys in the same year. So I think once they figure out what to do with Savage, if they do Savage, then that'll sort of dictate how they handle Sting this year or next year.
I think we've got plenty of time for Sting to go in. And like you said, I do think Savage would be my priority in terms of who gets in. And I think you can get two Mania matches out of Sting. I think you can get the match with Triple H coming up on next year's Mania. And then, you know, if he's still healthy and he can still do it in the ring, I'd say have him go out in a tag team match, whether that be, you know, teaming with Cena or teaming with, you know, if Undertaker's healthy, have those two go out together on that last show.
That would be interesting.
But yeah, what we really brought you on the show to talk about, Steve, is relationships. Now, relationships are a funny thing. Marcus is getting ready to get married next year.
Congratulations.
The listeners of this show know my ups and downs with my relationships in the past. Robert Griffin III is having a bad relationship with Coach Jay Gruden and the Redskins. But we need more love in this world, and that's why we brought you on to talk this Thanksgiving week, Steve, and let the people know about tagmeadate.com, a site that Marcus and I had great joy in discussing a couple months ago, and we had a little fun with the site, but we did want to bring you on and let the people know what's going on with Tag Me a Date.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, and I did listen. You guys are awesome. Tag Me a Date is the first ever dating site for wrestling fans. We're not really looking for anyone else. We want wrestling fans. We're very unique. We're very different in just how our entire website will actually be, you know, works. You know, you go to, if out there, if you've ever been to eHarmony, Match.com, JDate, any of those, man, sometimes you have these long questionnaires that you got to fill out. Sometimes make you feel like you're filling out a college thesis. You know, it's just tedious and it's long. So we cut all that out. We don't care if you like red or white wine. We don't care about any of that. We want to know who your favorite wrestler is, who your favorite manager is, who your favorite tag team is, if you've ever been to a live event, if you follow independent wrestling. Talk about the first live event you've ever been to, things like that. And then our website will find you matches based on how you're answering those wrestling-related questions. So it's very unique. It's very different. And we have some great things coming. We've only been live just over a month. We have over 2,000 signups already.
Wow.
We are December 1st. We are going to be in the UK and in Canada. Thank you to the WWE for dropping the ball and not getting the network to the UK when you were supposed to. I'm going to get there first. we are going to bring love to the UK. You know, my theory in doing this website is, as a wrestling fan, every wrestling fan can relate to the awkwardness of going on that first or second date. Wrestling, if you are a true wrestling fan, it is on probably almost every day in your home now with the network. And I mean, it's on every day, you know, with Raw, SmackDown, TNA, and, you know, the NXT and everything. So it's always on. And it, and if it's something that you are passionate about, it takes up a lot of your time. You need to be able to find somebody that's going to want to share their time with you and enjoy wrestling, you know, and that's where I came out with this, because, you know, you go on those first few dates and you don't know, should you bring up wrestling? You know, it's kind of, you know, people don't know if you bring it up or not.
The answer is no, you know? By the way.
Right. The answer is no. You're right though, but see, you know that. And that's my point. With tagmeadate.com, the awkwardness is taken out because whoever you find shares your passion for wrestling. You know, it's like you guys are going to save up to go on that first trip together. And it's not going to be a cruise. It's going to be, where's WrestleMania this year? You know, the first date, or the, not the first date, the first vacation, a surprise from now my wife, when we were together 1 year anniversary, she surprised me with Atlanta trip, WrestleMania, what wound up being Edge's last WrestleMania, you know, and that's what I want to be able to give to everybody, you know, so I bring you tagmeadate.com, and together we're going to turn wrestling night into date night.
Now, Nate, how do we get you on the site? Because I'm accounted for, I don't need the site. Nate, you're single. I'm sure you're ready to mingle. Will you sign up for the service?
Oh, you put me on the spot here.
Because I think we need like a weekly report. This could be a weekly segment that, you know, people, you're internet famous in the wrestling community.
I'll tell you what. I tell you what. Why don't we do this? You already get your first month free when you sign up. So right there, you have absolutely nothing to lose. I say you wait until December 1st or 2nd. Sign up and take your first month. We have some huge upgrades coming December 1st. We have some huge upgrades. We have some improvements. And we also have one big special feature that is being added December 1st. And I can't go into too much detail yet. But what I can tell you is that this is something that has never been done. We will be the first. You know, 5-6 years down the line, you guys are going to still be talking about Tag Me a Date, and you guys will be talking about that they were the first dating site to ever do this. So it's going to be pretty cool. It's going to be different, and I think it's something that the wrestling fans will have fun with. So that's my pledge to you, and then I can always come back on after your free month is up, and we can talk about your experiences thus far, and see what we can do, and possibly give you a little bit of an extension on the site.
I'll have to think about that. That would make for an interesting experiment.
There's no thinking. You're doing it. Now, next Tuesday, we report the show December 2nd. You're signing up on the show live on the air. Okay? Deal.
Now, Steve, in terms of the site, you said you've got 2,000 subscribers already.
Yeah.
What are the demographics of the site?
Right now, we're about 75-25, which is just a month. So we're pretty excited. It's quite a bit more than I even expected right off the bat. We have some great media campaigns that are going to be coming out December 1st as well. I don't know if you guys recall the first article that was ever written about Tag Me a Date through the Manhattan Digest. They are going to be doing a follow-up, and then we're doing a media campaign. It's going to go to women's fitness magazines, a bunch of other women's magazines such as that, and then UProx, Reddit, all that stuff. We're going to have a media kit put together. We're going to have a commercial on YouTube to start. We have a Kickstarter campaign that should be live by next week, and that's for us to just raise some money to just make even more improvements to the site and continue to promote and market and be out there. We've gotten some phenomenal feedback from some of the greats in the business. If you go check out Facebook, Tag Me a Date, we have all the pictures of us up at live shows, hanging out with guys like Kurt Angle and Bully Ray and Velvet Sky, who was a big supporter. Matt Hardy, you know, some X-Pac. I mean, the list goes on and on. Alberto Del Rio. So we've been getting some really great feedback. Rowdy Piper gave us a big thumbs up. So it's really getting better week after week, and it's growing fast, and it's exciting.
Now, you probably don't know the information about this, but is there a way for you to track to know how many people who've signed up are actually workers and how many people are actually wrestling fans?
Good question. I mean, one thing that we can do, if anybody has tried to register with a fake email, those are automatically taken out. We automatically fish those out. Other than that, there's really no way to do that. You know, we just gotta hope that, you know, the wrestling fans are going to take this seriously and see that this is something that is going to help them find somebody that's going to enjoy it.
Oh, no, I mean workers as in, like, actual wrestlers, like indie guys who are actually looking for
them. Got you. I mean, listen, a lot of the, you know, a lot of the indie guys, it depends on how they sign up. You know, some of them might sign up with their wrestling names. I'm friends with a lot of the guys with Northeast Wrestling. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them. I'm friends with a lot of those guys. Some of them have even cut little promos about Tag Me a Date, which we've posted videos on. Some of them have said that they will be signing up. I don't know how they're going to sign up either with their wrestler names or with their real names. So that's to be seen. We actually might even have Rodus Clay signing up with us. He's expressed interest, and we told him we'll give him some lifetime subscription deal. So we're setting up, and I'm pretty sure he'll sign up as Brodus.
Boy,
Tyrus, I guess, now.
I have a great Brodus.
But he's a good guy. So, you know, so yeah, so we'll see. But, you know, time will tell. I mean, there are some really cool things we can see. You know, for example, I can tell you in terms of hits and hot zones, the most that hit our site, obviously U.S. is first, followed very strongly by the U.K., followed by Canada, followed by Australia, and then Ireland. So we're getting across the country. I mean, this is growing fast, faster than I expected, which is a great thing. And I just hope we meet everyone's expectations. And, you know, we're going to continue to get better and grow and make it awesome.
What's your biggest hotspot within the U.S.?
Right now, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, North Carolina, Atlanta, those are the biggest spots right now.
Traditional big markets for wrestling. That's interesting.
Yeah, that, you know, that's funny. That's exactly what we said too. Very interesting. You know, but, you know, it's, we have been limited into the kind of marketing we can do. I mean, sure, I've done quite a number of podcasts, and we do go to a lot of indie shows where we have tables set up and we do a lot of live promotion. You know, but that's why we're going to do the Kickstarter, so that we can continue to be able to do some really great marketing and get some real good exposure. But I mean, we're getting out there. I've got a radio station, where are they from? Near Dallas. That's already reached out to me. They want me to come on. So, I mean, we're getting attention. We're getting out there. So,
and I'm just imagining Brodus Clay setting up his profile. Ladies, do you need a man that was born to shuck and jive? But
One thing I'm interested to find out, Steve, is what has been the toughest part of this whole project so far? Has it been raising the capital? Has it been designing the site? Has it been kind of the resistance? You know, we, like I said, when we first read the story, we had plenty of jokes. Has it been kind of getting past the initial funniness of the situation and letting people see, hey, no, this is a serious thing?
You know, I there's still a lot of people that think it's just hilarious, and that's fine. You know, listen, whether people are talking negatively or positively, they're talking. And at the end of the day, that's free exposure for me. So I take it with very, you know, with grain salt. I think it's great either way. You know, to answer your question, I think it's starting to get more serious. I think people are kind of like, oh, my God, it's a real thing. You know, people at first were kind of like, this can't be real. You know, like farmers, you know, like this can't be real. You know, and then they find out it is, and they're like, oh, well, let me check it out. And then, you know, in terms of what has been the toughest, it's really a combination of the first two. There's three. You know, with running a website, things never go without a hitch. They never go 100% smooth the way you want it to. I mean, look, when, you know, the government launched Obamacare, you know, the first day it crashed, you know, I mean, nothing ever goes the way you want it to go. You know, we did have quite a few issues at the beginning when we launched, but they were all things that we were able to correct pretty quickly. And we obviously took care of everybody and extended out everybody's free time so that nobody lost any of their free time. In fact, they've gotten well beyond it, and we're still continuing it thus far. But, you know, we did have some technical issues that we worked through. You know, design problems, not necessarily design problems. You know, some things just take long to put together because you want things to go right and you want it to work well. And capital, of course, you know, and again, that's why we're going to do the Kickstarter campaign. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll be able to raise some money. We have some big shows that we're going to be going to that we're already committed to, and we're already sponsoring a big event in North Carolina with Masters of the Ring, which is a tribute to Jim Cornette, which is awesome. You guys should look that up. So, you know, there have been some struggles, but, you know, we're getting better and stronger every day, and we're getting some great feedback. So,
now, how did you meet your wife?
I actually rented my wife a car, and I used to work for Enterprise Rent-A-Car many years ago, and I rented my wife a car ultimately. I got her number, and we went out on a date, and the first date, we had that awkward moment. You know, I kept thinking, well, do I mention it right away? And I'm pretty sure there was a pay-per-view coming up, and that's why it was kind of in my head. And So I walk her to her car, and I said, you know, I got to ask you a question. And she kind of gave me that look of, you know, like, oh, crap, what's he going to say, you know, kind of thing. And I was like, no, it's nothing serious. I just needed to know, you know, how you feel about professional wrestling. And she looks at me, and she goes, oh, what do you mean? Batista, Triple H, Undertaker, John Cena, Hulk Hogan. And she started going down the entire roster. And I looked at her and I was like, I'm going to marry you one day. And here we are. We have two kids and we still have Raw parties every Monday night and pay-per-views. So.
Wow. All right. So yeah. You got lucky.
I did. I got lucky.
Oh,
but that's what I'm hoping to bring to everyone else through tagmeadate.com. You know?
That is very cool. That is very cool. Yeah, like I'm the first one with jokes, but now, you know, you've even melted my cold, cynical heart.
Well, you know, listen, I remember when we first launched, there was we got a message on Facebook, and it was some kid who was angry, and he wrote something like, you know, why do you think that wrestling fans need help finding women, you know, or something like that? And one of my guys who works for me, went on there before I did, and he wrote back to the guy. He goes, dude, I'm a wrestling fan, and I'm single, and I'm on the site. That's what it's for. Like, it's not at all. I mean, were you going to say that for people that are on JDateMatch.com? I mean, online dating is the number one way people meet nowadays. People don't go to the bar and the club like they used to. Now everything is online. It's the number one online business. It's the number one, you know, way people are meeting. And when I realized that there was nothing like this for wrestling fans, you know, I figured we had a good shot. I mean, if you listen to the WWE, you know, 35% of their fan base are women.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you through, you know, 30 years of going to live shows, you know, a lot of women that are there wearing the shirts, and some of them are not with guys, you know, not to say that they're not with girls, but, you know, and we're open to that too. Yeah, you know, listen, you know, if you're a diva looking for a diva, by all means, tagmeadate.com, you know, and vice versa. I mean, we don't discriminate the other way either, but so, yeah.
Let me give some advice to the listeners. What you really, you don't need to find a wrestling fan per se. Not that I'm trying to not get people to sign up, but you know, if you come across a young lady who you're interested in, you just need her to tolerate wrestling.
Right.
See, I think that's what my fiance does. She tolerates wrestling. She's been to WrestleManias because she understands that I like it, and she enjoys wrestling enough that she understands that, you know, WrestleMania is a bit spectacle.
See, but then you're lucky as well.
Yes.
You
so
know,
you just need
you
someone
know you
who
are.
Who's understanding enough that you can watch wrestling and she won't give you a hard time about it. She doesn't have to be a fan, you know. That's just
that's true. That's very true. I agree with that.
I think it's the same with anything, whether it's wrestling, sports, whatever your hobby is, music, video games, you know, you can't get into a relationship with somebody that doesn't accept your passions from the start, because you're going to set yourself up for failure.
Yeah,
that's true.
Because there's going to be resentment, and then there's going to be swerves, and somebody's going to get hit with a steel chair. Nobody wants that.
Well, you know, and that's the thing, too. You know, it's like you find somebody that can't tolerate it, that doesn't like it at all, you know, but you fall in love with that person. Now you're with them, and now every time there's a WrestleMania and you want to spend hundreds of dollars to go, or even thousands, depending nowadays where you're going from and what kind of package you're getting, but, you know, that could become a big issue, you know, and that can start resentment, you know. It's like, well, you knew I was a fan before you got into this kind of thing, you know what I mean? So, we take that out of the picture.
Plus, you got to sell them on the actual destination. You say, hey, look, we can go to New Orleans for the weekend, but we got to spend some time at WrestleMania. But the rest of the time, you can, you know, New Orleans. Last two I went to was New Orleans and New York City. You really can't go wrong with those cities.
That's a true story. I was in New York City as well. I was at the Hall of Fame the night before, too.
That is very cool. So, Steve, in terms of the future of this site, I know you said you got December 1st, you got some big updates coming, but kind of project maybe a year from now, a couple years from now, what is your ultimate goal? You know, I know you want to find people love, I know you want to make some money, but what would you like to accomplish through Tag Me a Date?
I want to be worldwide. I want to become one of the biggest things related to the wrestling business without being in the wrestling business. And I would love, honestly, I would love to get success stories. You know, I would love to hear from people that said, you know, hey, listen, we met on Tag Me a Date and we had, you know, our WrestleMania wedding, and no, the priest did not get tombstoned, or, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, but, you know, I think that would be really cool to say, you know, we helped somebody, you know, find what I have, you know, And I think that would be really cool. And to have thousands upon thousands, if not millions, signed up and finding it as well. I mean, we will be successful. And the rapidness of how successful we are depends on the wrestling fans. Get on there and try it out. You got nothing to lose with your first month being free. But I promise you, You're going to love it. And it's something different. Wrestling fans are loyal. They're like a cult. Try something that's wrestling related, and it's free. You know? It's not even $9.99 right now. It's free for your first month.
You know what I would love? I wish you all the success, Steve. But what I would love is, you know how when these sites get big, they start to branch off and you got splinter groups? I want Latino Tag Me at Date.com with some Lucha themes. I want
EWO Tag Me at EWO Wrestling.com.
You Jobber Tag Me at Date for the African Americans. Don't worry, you can laugh at that joke. It's okay, Steve.
Like, what?
I was laughing. As soon as I heard him laughing, I said, we're in the clear.
Yeah, it's cool.
Like, why is everybody on this particular site on Tag Me and they dancing? Is this the... Why has everybody got somebody call my mama for their theme song? This is...
Oh, that's funny.
See, that's a good way to end the show, Marcus. We started off with some heavy stuff and people being divided, and we end together laughing together.
It works for me.
It works for you?
It works for me.
Well, Steve, for those that are interested in the site, let them know the details, where they can find you. Let them know, you know, where they can follow you on social media to get all these great updates. And, you know, if they're interested, where they can sign up for TagMeAdate.com.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can go to TagMeAdate.com. You can sign up right there. Join our mailing list. You'll get all the updates through email. All the reporting anyway. You can follow us on Twitter at Tag Me a Date. You can, we're on Facebook, which is Tag Me a Date. You can find us there. And on Facebook, we have a link which will take you to our site, so you can do it either way. We also make it easy when you go to sign up. You can use your Facebook or Twitter accounts to sign up to make it easy. Have fun with it. It's awesome, and it's only going to continue to get better. So come find us. Your first month is free. Nothing to lose.
Yeah, I think I might do this, Marcus.
Yeah, you're going to do it. We told you you're going to do it next week.
We'll do the free month, and then we'll have to have Steve back on next year, and we can discuss my experience.
Okay.
That would be fantastic. I am open to it anytime.
All right. Well, Steve, thank you for coming on the show, man. I appreciate you. Only thing I'm disappointed in is Sierra couldn't join us this week because she had a lot of stuff going on for the holidays. But maybe next time you come on, we'll have Sierra talk to you because she really was interested in hopping in on this conversation as well.
That would be great. Listen, I'm game to come back anytime you guys are willing to have me. I appreciate you guys. And I would love to chat again. And have a wonderful holiday to you all.
Yeah,
all
right, you too, Steve.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right. Well, that is Steve Glenwick, the founder of TagMeADate.com. And that's going to do it for this week's show, Marcus.
The longest show ever.
The longest show ever. So happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Marcus, if the people want to know where they can follow you and follow your work and send you offensive, inflammatory tweets about what we talked about for the first two segments, where can they find you at?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
You can follow me at N8, MozaiK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow the show, Cospod, KOS_POD on Twitter. Facebook, facebook.com/ The Kings of Sport. Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com powers our show. So get down with Place to Be Nation. You can hear me on Pipe Bomb Radio every week. Review and Impact is on hiatus, but we'll be back in January. And I think it's going to do it.
I think that's it.
That's it. So, yeah, like the show, share the show, iTunes, Stitcher, all that good stuff. So that's going to do it for this week. It's been a crazy week in and out of the world of sports. So we hope everybody has a great holiday. Everybody has a safe holiday. And, you know, that this weekend we use this time to heal and enjoy a good meal. And that's for real. You like what I did there?
Wow. I'm shaking my head. You can't see me because this is an audio show. But...
I mean, we could talk about Adrian Peterson again. Is that what you want, Marcus?
Nope.
Okay. So, for Marcus Vanderberg, I'm the Godfather Nate Milton. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody, because you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, thanks.